ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय मतिर् मयि निबध्येयम् न विभध्येत कर्हिचित् प्रजा सर्ग निरोधेऽपि स्मृतिश्च मरनुग्रहात् मथिर्मयि निबध्येयम् न विपद्येत कर्हिचित् प्रजासर्गनिरोधेऽपि स्मृतिश्च मरनुग्रहात् मथिर् इन्टेलिजेन्स् Mayi, devoted to me. Nibaddha, engaged. Iyam, this. Na, never. Vipadyeta, separate. Karihichit, at any time. Praja, living beings. Saraga, at the time of creation. Nirodhe, also at the time of annihilation. Api, even. Smriti, remembrance. Cha, and. Mat, mine. Anugrahat, by the mercy of. Translation. Intelligence engaged in my devotional service cannot be thwarted at any time, even at the time of creation, as well as at the time of annihilation. Your remembrance will continue by my mercy. Purport. Devotional service rendered to the Personality of Godhead never goes in vain. Since the Personality of Godhead is eternal, intelligence applied to His service or anything done in His relation is also permanent. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that such transcendental service is rendered under the Personality of Godhead, accumulates birth after birth, and when the devotee is fully matured, the total service counted together makes them eligible to enter into the association of the Personality of Godhead. Such accumulation of God's service is never vanquished, but increases till fully matured. So here, intelligence, then, part of that, as we discussed before, is memory. So memory, then, will not be lost, you know, or the ability or the intelligence how to engage in the Lord's service. This is an important principle, because the devotional service, it does not have a beginning or an end. Right? It's the eternal principle. So by engaging in the Lord's service, then this eternal element is always present. So whatever is done is never lost. This is an important thing, because the tendency is that there's always the idea of loss, gain and loss. This is very prominent in the mind of the living entity. That I will perform an activity, I will gain. I will perform another activity, I will lose. Or what I've gained, I can still lose. Because that's our experience in the material world. What is gained is lost. So, it's being pointed out here is that devotional service, nothing is ever lost. So that's an important thing to understand, is that material world is lost, but service to God is not lost. So, to be able to make this distinction between these two, this is important. It's an important thing. Because that we can always have faith in. No matter what happens, devotional service goes on. doesn't matter what the calamity, what the change in situation, change in relationships, change in anything, devotional service still goes on. There's no loss in that. So that element then is very important, because otherwise the material world, things are always adjusting, always changing. There's always the idea that something will be lost. So devotional service may be lost, but this can't be lost. So Krishna is pointing this out. So that means even in the creation or disillusion, it can't be lost. And so that's a bit of a wild time, right? We understand from the Bhagavatam and disillusion, then at that time the sun expands its heat, grows to 12 times. You know, so now we know what a hot day is like. Multiply that by 12. You know, a little warmer than normal. Ananta Sage starts, flames come out of his mouth, burning up the universe. Lord Shiva starts doing his dance and destroying all the heads of the, you know, all the, the sadhyas, you know, the archetypical head of each group of living entities. So, and the flood, the Garbhodak ocean comes up, floods everything. So it's not necessarily a peaceful time, quite turbulent. But even in that state, the intelligence is not lost on devotional service. As we see Markandeya Rishi, then he finds himself floating around in that flood water and that. And he is able to remember the Lord, and very peacefully the Lord is coming by, going by in a banyan leaf, sucking on his toe, or he sees different things. You know, all these different things are happening. Jagannath Puri is there, so many. He sees all this. So his intelligence still remains. He is able to perceive all this despite what is happening. So that faith should be there, that devotional service will last. That is very important. So now here it's mentioning accumulates birth after birth. So by performance of devotional activities, in an unknowing stage, that brings us to the point of actually taking up seriously devotional service. When it's accumulated enough, we take up the association of devotees. That is the point when you understand devotional service has become serious. When it's enough that we value the association of devotees. If we don't value the association of devotees, means our devotional service hasn't really developed enough. And when we find it important, then we take up. We come to the temple, we associate with devotees, we hear from devotees, we spend whatever time we can with devotees. That means we're serious, because whatever is valuable to you, you associate with those persons, right? Just like you have a club. A club is there because there's a value, a common value. And then people join that club who want to cultivate that value. And the main thing about a club is association. Right? One can do something oneself and enjoy that oneself. One can go out skiing oneself and enjoy that. It has a taste. But if you're really serious, then the association of other people then increases that taste, increases our understanding, increases our mood. And so then we become more and more fixed in that understanding, in that identity, in that endeavor. So that's why association is so important. So when we take that up, that is the result of so much devotional service has been gained. And when that comes to maturity, after so much development, then we get the association of the Lord. So we see that even in the spiritual world, that even this is recognized. We see in Dwarka pastimes that the sons of Krishna, because each expansion of Krishna, he has 16,108 wives, so he expands one for each wife, and each has 10 sons. So it means only so many sons can sit on one lap at one time, right? Of course, God's unlimited, but for the pastime, then the lap is so big. So you get. So whoever is sitting on Krishna's lap, then the other brothers, then they are commenting amongst themselves that it's only due to great accumulation of pious activities that now this boy is able to sit on the lap of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So that's appreciated. Or we see in the Bhagavatam, Sukadev Goswami is pointing out that only after great accumulation of pious activities, pious meaning devotional service, that the cowherd boys are able to sit there and wrestle with Krishna, challenge him, you know, eat lunch with him, steal his food, you know, make jokes with him, and this way, you know, just deal in these amazing ways. It's only due to devotional piety. So when that's accumulated to such a great extent, then one is able to then have the Lord's association. So the first stage is when devotional service accumulates, then we get the association of devotees. By the association of devotees, then we get the association of the Lord. Because by that association of devotees, our service increases. By that increasing, then only we can get the Lord's service. So that's the... So the volume of devotional service, that's important. But the volume is dependent on association of devotees. This is the main point. So it's only because of the proper association of devotees that the Lord is willing to associate with us. Because the devotee is the most dear to Krishna. So if the devotees become most dear to us, then there's a commonality. Right? Relationship, there must be a common principle. If there's not a common principle, you can't have a relationship. And there must be interaction, right? So there's difference. Chinta Veda, Veda Tattva. There's commonality and there's difference. So when we see the... when we have commonality with the devotees and we associate with the devotees, then we actually have a common platform with the Lord. Then He'll be interested to associate with us. Otherwise, then what's the interest? What is the common point between us and the Lord? Okay, we want to see God. We want to be freed from material nature. We want to be freed from all the pains of the material world. We want to experience transcendental bliss. But does that mean God's got to be part of it? Right? Just because we want it, is that good enough? Right? The man in the street wants to be the millionaire. He wants to be famous. He wants to be respected. He wants to be in charge. He wants to control everything. He wants to be, you know, the big charitable person, you know, thought about affectionately by everybody. But is that good enough? No. You have to do it. Right? Of course, if desire is there, one can try to move in that direction. But the point is it's not good enough. One has to have it. So, devotional service is... We say we want to be freed, we want to be associated with God, but then we have to prove it. We have to serve. And in that service, then it has to be favorable. And favorable means in the association of devotees. If it's not favorable in the association of devotees, it doesn't have any meaning. Because without the devotees, there is no Krishna. Right? It means Krishna in His form as Atmarama. Right? Then the devotees aren't manifest. So where will we be? Right? If we're going to associate with the Lord, it means everybody else is going to be there. We're not going to be there alone with the Lord. Therefore, unless we appreciate devotees, then there won't be any chance of associating with the Lord. This is the principle. So this intelligence then in devotional service then is not lost. It cannot be adjusted. I've even heard of a story. I've heard of two stories like this. I don't know if anyone can confirm that. But where the parents of the devotee were not overly pleased with their devotional inclinations. So they had them captured and they turned them over to some psychologists who then kept him in some special, you know, psychiatric institution. And they were giving them all kinds of drugs and all that to remove from their memory any remembrance of devotional service and all these things. So they blank out the memories, so it just becomes blank. And then you retrain them, right? So they don't even remember their past. right? It's like a forced, you know, what do you call it, amnesia. And so everything gone. They didn't remember their parents. They don't remember nobody, who their name is, where they are, why they're there, nothing. But they would chant Hare Krishna. Like that. And so then the psychologist said, okay, forget this one. You know. But I've heard of two instances of this, like that, in different countries. So, huh? Yeah, you cannot arrange the hard disk. So this principle is there, is that because it's habit, like that, is that Krishna mentions that if one remembers him, you know, or chants the holy name in a difficult situation, right? Means unknowingly. Some shock or some fear or something happens where you just, and then your reaction is to chant the holy name. That's very dear to Krishna. So that comes by practice, and that comes by determination that Krishna is the most important, is our shelter. Then naturally, when there's a disturbance, we'll just take shelter. So that's what Krishna really notices. You notice the endeavor, he'll notice everything. But when that endeavor comes to the point of habit, where it goes so deep, right? Like here, the intelligence is so focused that at no moment it's lost. Then that's very, very much appreciated by Krishna. Any questions on this?
Such a thing as unconscious devotional service.
Such a thing as unconscious devotional service.
And sometimes we don't want to do something, so we don't have to pay for it. Chanting sometimes very unconscious. It's also accumulated for us.
Yeah, it means does service that we're not conscious during. Well, there's two kinds of it. One is that we don't know what is devotional service, so that's unconscious. We may be conscious that we're performing an activity, but we don't know what it is. Like we take prasad, we just know it's great food, or, you know, yeah, nice music, or, you know, kind of like a, you know, trendy outfit, you know, or something, you know, like that. It's like we appreciate something about devotional service. We see, we have darshan, who's the dude with the big round eyes? You know, he comes out of this funny cart pulled by all these people. You know, so somehow or another you see. So then we see, we hear, we taste, we smell, we touch. Something is there, but we don't know it's devotional service. So that's agyata supriti. So when that increases enough, we take up devotional service. But then within devotional service, then we perform it, but we're not so conscious because we're distracted by other things. But benefit is still there, but it'll be less. But those moments that we're conscious, that matures it, that is more prominent in maturing it towards prema. Those moments that we're not conscious, those tend to take it towards freeing us from material energy. Right? Because if we're not conscious, that's namabhas. And namabhas will liberate us from the material condition. But it doesn't give prema. Right? Pure chanting will give prema. Like that. That's why we have to have that desire to develop love for Krishna, to associate with Krishna. Because by that, then we give up material desire. As we give up material desire, then we become conscious of Krishna. Right? We only become non-conscious of Krishna because of distraction by material modes. We're not impersonalists who don't know God exists, but are free from material contamination. Right? So they don't think of God, even if they're not thinking material energy. They're just absorbed in Brahman. But once one knows about God, then one will think about God. Right? So the tendency is we will not think about God when we're distracted by material desire. So the more we desire to serve Krishna, the more we desire to please Him, then the less material hankering will be there. hankering will be there, desire will be there. It's just a matter of what it is. So if we're full with spiritual desire, there's no room for material desire. Right? Once we have the taste for spiritual desire, we lose the taste for material desire. Right? But as long as that taste for material desire is there, then our desire for spiritual won't be complete. Does that make any sense? So it's always beneficial. That's the wonderful thing about devotional service, is that it always gives benefit, whether it's conscious or not. That's why for the children, they're engaged by the parents. The parents know, they've made a commitment, the children haven't. So they engage them in activities that they know are for their benefit. And then by that, the child becomes purified. And then at one point, they make that commitment. Like once, I think a devotee was discussing with Prabhupada about how, you know, it's like, is there similarity in you preach and make someone a devotee, and you have a child who's a devotee? Are they common? You know, it's like you get the same benefit. And Prabhupada said that you get the benefit on having the child, that it's the same as making a devotee when they turn 16 and they're committed to devotional service. Or whenever, from 16 plus, they commit themselves. At that point, then yes, you've made the devotee. Because they make their own choice at that point. So before that, basically, it's agyata sukriti. Is that until they make that choice, then it's only by association. They like the parents, they like those people that associate with the parents, so therefore they do what they do. And by doing that, they get benefit that they don't really know about. You can teach them that it's beneficial, but the realization may or may not be there. Like that. And especially the younger they are, that's therefore the samskaras, the Vedic samskaras, is to create a positive impression that will incline them towards devotional activities. Right? The jati karma, the birth ceremony, is for developing intelligence to discern between matter and spirit. Like that. Namakaran is so that they will deal, their dealings will be favorable with the modes of nature. Like that. Anaprasana will be, their health will be proper. You know, their digestion, because that's the basis of all health. Because then they can properly digest, they'll be healthy, they can engage in devotional service. Paushti karma, the general well-being, will be there so that they can be engaged. Because otherwise, you see, if someone's materialistic and their material situation is bad, immediately it's guaranteed they forget God. You know? But if they're not so materialistic, if they have a better situation, then whether it's good or bad, the tendency more is to think of uplifting things. Therefore, then the Vedic culture establishes that. Then as they become more conscious, and the parent naturally gives them what they feel is best, what has impressed them in their own life in devotional service. So they want to give that experience to their children, and by that experience, the children then get a taste for devotional service, and then they make their own commitment. And then making their own commitment, then they have the faith, and then that carries on to the next generation. So unconscious is always beneficial. It accumulates. But that's why it mentions fully matured. Fully matured means fully conscious all the time and to the full depth of absorption. Like that. Then you get the Lord's association. We see the gopis that were distracted by their household duties, you know, that they were thought it was nice. It's a nice situation, right? You had a house that runs perfectly. Nothing ever goes wrong, right? So one could easily get distracted. The material world, if we think about it, if things are going right, sometimes we have the tendency to not think about the Lord. We just get absorbed in what's going on. Because it started off being for the Lord, but we may not remember the Lord in the execution of those activities. But as soon as we run into an obstacle, the tendency, if we're, you know, Krishna conscious, is to think of the Lord, and that, yes, the material world and these attachments aren't worth it, and it's a place of misery, and it's temporary, and there's nothing to gain anyway. But the reason we were performing the activities, because we have a inherent concept that it will give us some happiness and satisfaction. therefore we're doing it, right? I mean, we're endeavoring in some activity because we feel the result we will get some benefit from. But as soon as we don't get, we run into obstacles. Then if the piety is greater than the impiety, then we will turn to God. And we'll go, yes, this material world is a place of misery, it's not worth it, and all that. Then we will perform those material activities as duty. You know, what is appropriate duty for us, we will perform those. And we'll be, you know, and the results we'll be satisfied with, because the results are for the Lord's pleasure. So we see is that that tendency is for that, for the result. So then you can understand is if everything goes perfectly, there's a tendency we might forget the Lord. We may not come up with the best plan. We may not be fully engaging our intelligence and our senses and mind and ego. Because it's like if we think of one plan and it works perfectly, we'll stick with that plan. Why will change it? But if our intelligence has more ability and we're not fully using it, then Krishna will put an obstacle so that we think more and more and deeper until we come up with something that Krishna is actually pleased with. So in the spiritual world there, then they may get attached to the perfectness of how it runs, because it is the spiritual world. It is Yoga Maya, it's not Mahamaya. And what you're dealing with is Chintamani, it's not dead matter. So they might get distracted. And if they do, then they're still Krishna conscious. But the absorption's not deep enough. They're still distracted by their pious and impious activities. Yes?
You're saying that when we philosophize in the mind, the material world is full of misery, and material desires never fulfill the heart. This is like not devotional service, because also the Gyanis, they think like that. Mm-hmm. When we connect it,
yeah, it means that thinking that material world is a place of misery, in it itself is not devotional service, but it's knowledge. And knowledge is based on shastra, so therefore it's considered pious, it's good. It's means, yes, it's transcendental, it's a symptom of the mode of goodness, like that, is that we understand that the material world is a place of misery, so we try to find the nicest situation for performance of service that will create the least disturbance. But then beyond that is transcendence, where we've connected it to Krishna. That's the point. When it connects to Krishna, that's when it becomes very dynamic. It means if you can get to the mode of goodness, it's always beneficial. But when it gets to transcendence, that's better. So we see is that's the difficulty here with Narad Muni as the son of a maidservant, is he's still attached to the mode of goodness. He's meditating alone in the forest. So being in the forest, that's the mode of goodness. Being alone in solitude is mode of goodness. You know, he knows the Lord, he knows the Paramatma, he knows the process, these processes of knowledge, of jnana and yoga. He is knowing, he's following them. But it's not enough. There has to be that desire to serve the Lord. Right? Here he wants to see the Lord, but it hasn't matured to the point of wanting to serve the Lord. Right? So that will come. And that's then what is the glory of, you know, the whole process here. That's why association is so important. For us, being in the temple, seeing the deities, associating with the devotees, this is more important than being alone in the forest. Because then we're just with ourselves, while we're others, and we get the inspiration to make our devotional service more dynamic. But, you know, we have our moments alone. That always is there. This aspect of nirjan bhajan is always there. But the form of it doesn't have to mean that we're off alone. Because even we see nirjan bhajan, these great acharyas go with somebody or with a few, with a group, but it's a controlled group that they know that the mood will be the same, like that. It's not necessarily that it's absolutely nobody. It just means you don't move with the masses. But even the devotee has those moments in the life day to day that you go on your japa walk in the morning, you're chanting your Gayatri or darshan of the deities, This is the one special thing about the worship of the Lord, is that even though you're in a group, everybody's worship is individual. Right? God is reciprocating with each person individually at the same time as one is there in a group. Very special. So those moments alone can happen when one's physically alone, or it can happen when one's in a crowd. It doesn't matter. One can feel very alone in the crowd. You know, it's like you may be in a big crowd and there's an earthquake and all the buildings are falling down, and even though there's hundreds of people around you, you feel pretty lonely. So that feeling of loneliness or togetherness is not numbers. It's basically it's quality. Like that. So that element is there. Does that make some sense? Different kinds of ecstasy. How to make distinction between the different kinds of ecstasy. Means it's mentioned in the nectar of devotion. That's the whole science of devotional mellows. Is that basically have your five different aspects of, I remember it's five different aspects of ecstasy. It means you have your sthayibhav, which means is the mood of transcendental ecstasy of a relationship, a specific relationship with Krishna that doesn't change. That is fixed. That's why it says sthayi. Sthayi means fixed, focused, that doesn't change. Like Mother Jashoda is always in the mood of parental rasa. It's not that, you know, one day is parental, next day, you know, she's out there, hey, you want to wrestle? You know, and the next day is, you know, she's standing there offering prayers and everything like that. It doesn't work like that. So that's sthayibhav. So that's fixed. Then in that sthayibhav, then you have those things that create the ecstasy. So that's vibhav. So there is the person, there is the person themselves that creates that ecstasy, and there are things that belong to that person that create the ecstasy. Like, you either see Krishna himself, or you see his paraphernalia, or you see something that reminds you of Krishna, like the tamal tree has Krishna's color, you know, or the monsoon clouds have Krishna's color. So those remind you. So then that inspires that ecstasy. Right? Then you have anubhav, which means that they is the activities that you're inspired to do in that ecstasy. You want to do something, you want to dance, you want to sing, you want to, you know, something is created because of that. Then there'll be physical ecstasies, which are the sattvika bhavas, that the ecstasy itself and the activity of those ecstasies will create physical symptoms, like crying or stunning of the body or paleness or becoming very thin or elongated or those kind of things. And then you have the samchari bhavas, that those affect, those are in the mind. That those are, I think there's 33 samchari bhavas. That they are like small little flavors that are constantly changing. That because of the mind, they may manifest physically, but not necessarily. They're a mood or a feeling that comes that is based on the, you know, that relationship and the activities that one's doing. So besides the main ecstasies that are coming, then there are these ones that are constantly changing. You know, that one, maybe the happiness or distress or, you know, different kinds of different little things that are there. Some of them are physical, like Hela is physical. You see Krishna and you just stare at him, that's one. But then you become absorbed and you think about different things, or you may that kind of cleverness of intimacy is there, the head goes to the side. You know, so you look at something like that. When you look at it aside, then it becomes more intimate. So like this, there's so many. There's 33 of those. So they manifest both within the mind and within the body. So if you want to know the details, then you read the Nectar Devotion that tells the whole science of these things.
Yes,
and ecstasy be covered. So, yeah, if there's covered ecstasy, there's a thing that I remember, I can't remember, I think Haridas Thakur mentions it, Nectar Devotion also. There's a shadow ecstasy, I forget the name of it. But it means that even in a neophyte, or even in an impersonalist, by coming in contact with the devotees and devotional service, that they feel ecstasy. But it's transcendental. But at the same time, it's not on that same platform like that. In comparison to anything we've tasted here, it's great. But in comparison to what is the transcendental ecstasy that one tastes in that full devotional service, that it's not the same. As we discussed before, is that the ecstasy that can be tasted in devotional service, the material body can't hold itself together. It would actually physically fall apart. Right? It's like Lord Chaitanya, the kurma bhav, right? It's like all the limbs just suck inside the body. So I don't think we could handle that, you know, it's like that. You know, I don't think it's so. Or they come along and he's, you know, elongated. I think he's like 9 or 10 feet long. So all his joints are elongated. So these kind of things, you know, it's just like back in the, you know, during the Spanish Inquisition, they used to have that ecstasy of extending themselves, but most people didn't survive the ecstasy, you know, so then. And I think there were some kings who also, they had a special bed. Anyone who would visit that caused their displeasure, they'd be put on the bed and would be made to the size of the bed. So if they were too short, they would be stretched. If they were too long, they would be, you know, made for proper. So most people don't survive these kind of things. So therefore, the ecstasies that they have there. When you get to bhava, it's actual ecstasy. It's constant, you know. Therefore, it's called bhava because it's prominent. Any stage before that, it may come, but because of material desire, then it won't be prominent. In Shraddha, there has to be some ecstasy, otherwise why would you even notice devotional service? Right? You only notice it because there's a taste that came that you didn't get somewhere else. So it is ecstasy, but in comparison to your other absorptions, it's only here and there. It means you think about it, yeah, I had some ecstasy then. You know, sometimes you can even remember the particular kirtan or the particular, you know, preparation, you know, this halava, this ecstasy, or, you know, or some class or something, you know, something that, but you can basically name them. So they're not prominent. Does that make sense? Therefore, something else is prominent. Your development of faith, your taking up, finding the association of devotees is valuable, or your endeavor to practice the devotional principles, or your stableness in devotional service, or your taste, or your attachment, like that, those are prominent, though the ecstasy is there. But when it comes to bhava, ecstasy becomes the prominent feature, therefore it's called bhava. But still, because some material flavor is still there, it's not prema. So in removing the process of, in the association of devotees, removing that and then attaining the association of the Lord, then that's completely burnt up. So then that bhava or ecstasy matures into prema. So that's why it says when it's fully mature. Increases till fully mature. Fully matured means prema. And then once it's fully matured, then it unlimitedly just gets deeper and deeper. There's no end to that. But it has to get to that platform to actually be transcendently pleasing to the Lord that He would want to associate with you all the time. because that's his platform. He's on that platform. So therefore, unless you're on that platform, how you'll associate. Does that make sense? Shraddha removes fear. Yeah. Because fear is caused by not knowing our relationship. Like that. Fear is a symptom of lack of sambandha. When the relationship has been compromised, then there's fear. Right? Just like, let us say you're in a situation, you're dependent upon somebody, and that somebody's removed. The first symptom to come generally is fear. Because you've lost them, then you think you lose everything else. You know, your whole support. So, because relationship becomes compromised, you know, or the elements within that relationship become compromised, so fear comes. So fear means that we don't know really who we are. It's an identity. Fear is an identity crisis. So it may be in connection with the body, it may be in connection with the mind, the senses, the emotions, the intelligence, or, you know, just one's social status. You know, you thought you were the big guy. It's just like it's a serious mental adjustment, like when the inauguration of the new president of America. Because the old president is there, and he actually hands over. And so, the one who's performing the duties today comes in. He's the president. He gets all the fanfare, all the welcome, all of this and that. But as soon as he turns it over to the other, he just fades into the back that second. It's not like, you know, the two of them are there and they go on together, and then afterwards it's kind of like the other guy does all the work. He doesn't. That moment, he just fades to the back. He's just another. He's just a citizen of the United States. In a moment. So you've gone from head of the country to just another guy in the country. You know, so they don't even ease you out nicely, you know. Because all the attention goes on the new person. Everybody forgets. So even though he could stand there and be there, he doesn't. Because it's like you're standing there and the person next to you, everybody's looking at them, everybody's getting all the attention, everything's going to him. You're getting nothing. The natural thing is just to shrink away and go to your assigned, you know, seat, your front row seat. You know, next to the other guys, and, you know, next to the high Supreme Court judge and all those other guys, you know, and just go over there. So your whole identity changes. So then this kind of thing, anytime that comes, then there's always a fear. Who you are, you'll rethink. Now he'll have to rethink seriously. Now it hits him in the face. Yeah, now he's got to go back to his peanut farming or whatever he was doing before, his law practice, something. You know, that's how he's going to make his bread and butter, unless he wants to write a book or something like that. You know, so then, but otherwise, his whole identity changes. You know, instead of being the president, he was one of the guys that was president. So that is the cause of fear. Because fear is fear of loss. So the original fear is the primeval sin of wanting to be God. So we're fearful that I am servant. Right? And we're fearful that God is God and not us. So anytime any calamity comes or any obstacle comes that makes it obvious that we're not in control and we're not the enjoyer, immediately fear comes. Bullseye. Yeah. Yeah, so that immediately fear comes because there's loss. You know? It will be covered possibly by anger and for other things like that. But the underlying thing is fear. It's just like if somebody's satisfied or peaceful, what do they care? You know, it's just like you're sitting there and you got 200 guys behind you, you know, fully supporting you. And one punk comes out and starts yelling and screaming at you and calling all kinds of names and how he's going to rip you apart and tear you to shreds and chew you up and spit you out and this and that. Are you fearful or angry? Or you just sit there. What do you care? You know, you got all these guys standing here. He makes one move, the guy's his kid. So it's like, what do you care? But if it's the other way around, then you might feel some fear. You know, you might think, I could lose my body. You know, here. I could seriously lose my material identity in the next few seconds. So it's kind of like, you wanted to be out of the movie, okay. So fear is based on, then you see I'm not God. So that creates fear. Or the aspect is that we have to surrender. The situation comes up and I have to surrender. It creates fear. And the reaction to that may be anger. It's like you get an animal cornered. They're fearful. You have them cornered. You're at the advantage. They're at the disadvantage. And you've gotten them in the corner. That means you're stronger than them. But sometimes the reaction is that so much more anger that they will fight so much more severely. You know? That's why you never corner. You leave it out. Because then their ego is, they're left fearful. But as soon as that, they give up all fear. You know, and just go. So it's just understood is that out is always left. So the point is that's why Krishna says, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. Is there nonsense or this or that? There's nothing good about them. But you leave the out. It's just, you just chant Hare Krishna, you don't have to change anything. You just chant. You take up this chant and you leave everything else open. And then they take it. So when one has faith, fear goes because you know who you are. We know I'm not God. You know, and that's a relief. That's a relief. We know we're not the body. We know we're not the mind intelligence. Because then they are always let us down. They always give trouble. Like that. You know, there are moments when we are quite proud of them. You know, but at moments when they're not, it's a little more difficult. You know, because that moment comes. You know, is that Kunti was the most beautiful princess in her day. But then so was Draupadi. You understand? So many were. So each generation, there's always one. That means that the previous one isn't anymore. She was. You know? So you always have that point, is no matter how qualified or intelligent, there's always someone else coming. There's always another generation. So it's always moving on. So if we're intelligent, there's always someone more intelligent. You know, if we're intelligent, but higher than us, then the demigods are more intelligent. Higher than that, you have Brihaspati. Higher than that, you have these other sages. You have Brahma. Higher than him, then Shiva. Higher than Vishnu. So like that, it's always someone more intelligent. You know, and Vishnu is a category we can't kind of get into. So we kind of got to accept that we're always going to have someone more intelligent. So that by understanding that we're servant of Krishna, and we're not the enjoyer, we're the servant, then his pleasure is our pleasure, then we're free from all fear. Because fear is based on that one point, is that if we think we're God, we're the controller and enjoyer, all other fear that's there is based on that. You remove that one, there is no other fear. Prahlad Maharaj wasn't fearful. He wasn't going, oh, lions and tigers and bears, oh no. He wasn't doing that. You know, they can come with anything they want. He was happy. He just chants the holy name. Okay, he gets squashed by an elephant, so what? Like I think it was in 74, the discussion, 74 or 76, all the discussions about nuclear war. Right, there's discussion about, you know, we'll do this and that, and, you know, what do we do about the fallout? So many things, really, really planning and really going for it. And so many different things and that. We probably made the point is, you know, if a bomb drops on your head and you die 20 years earlier, then what's the big deal? If you chant Hare Krishna, you go back to Godhead. Who cares? You know, you die today, you die tomorrow, what's the big... You're going to die, so it's like, you know, what's the big deal? So for Prahlad Maharaj, what's the big deal? He dies today, he dies tomorrow, it doesn't matter. So he's fearless. That's why it always makes the point in devotional service. Bhagavatam makes it, Gita makes it, about becoming fearless. Becoming fearless means that you become fixed in devotional service, which means you're fixed in your identity that I am servant of Krishna. As soon as that comes, when you're fully convinced I am servant of Krishna, then that's the stage of nishtha. Then you become stable. As long as we think we're controller and enjoyer, then it's always going to be anishtha bhakti. It's always going to be.
Controller is like a big fear.
Control is a big fear.
We want to control the things that we want. Oh, we don't want my kids to die. We don't want to be here. We don't want. But it's whatever Krishna wants.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole thing. As soon as there's fear, as soon as there's dissatisfaction, the first option we always choose is independence. Because we figure, I will control the situation. I've gotten into problem because of these people. I do it on my own, then there'll be no problem. But it may be socially easier, it may be economic, it may be so many advantages to doing it on your own, but if God's not involved, then our independence doesn't really mean anything. Because still, the modes of nature are going to do it for us. You know? Like that. That's all. It's going to... Our karma is going to come through a living entity. So whether it's through us or through someone else, it doesn't matter. We're gonna get it anyway. Like that. So, like that. So as soon as we give up that fear, then everything becomes peaceful. Like that. That's why the devotees are so peaceful. Even the demigods aren't peaceful because they're fearful. They're fearful of losing their position, their wealth, their power, their... You know, when Indra is there, and then he sees, suddenly he's on his throne, and he sees being ushered in this very effulgent person with all the great personalities that generally attend to him. And then, he immediately is, who is this person? You know, he feels threatened. You know, like that. That's the new Indra. Then he looks at himself and he sees his effulgence is gone. So he knows it's just a matter of moments before that person sits on the seat and he falls through the floor, you know, and comes back to earth as a raindrop. You know. So then it's... So fear is there. But for the devotee, there is no fear. Vritrasura had no fear. Indra was fearful because he's a neophyte. But Vritrasura was a pure devotee. He had no fear. His point is, you know, you kill me, I go back to Godhead. And you're supposed to kill me. I've been ordained to be killed by you, and I've been ordained to be killed by you using your brudger, your thunderbolt weapon. So you picked up your club. So I'm not going to get killed. I'm not going to go back to Godhead. And you're not going to fulfill your duty. Right? You've been instructed by God to use the thunderbolt. And you, out of your own pride, in your position of Indra, have picked up your club. Therefore, you're in Maya. So get with it. You know, pick up your thunderbolt and kill me. He has no fear. Because, you know, he's servant. Whether he's servant as Chitraketu, whether he's servant as Vritrasura, or he's servant, he's gone back to God, the spiritual world. There's no change for him. So there's no fear. So that's why then they're real peaceful. Shraddha. Because actually Shraddha is the biggest, because actually prema means mature faith. That's why if at any point faith is given up, basically you stop progressing. You may have gone to an advanced level, but if you drop your faith, then you don't progress. It just stops. But because it's so wonderful, devotional service, it's not lost. So then when the faith comes again, you immediately take up where you left off. You know, so you may have a faith. That's the point, is the mistake can never be made. So you have these advanced devotees who did big service in their day. You know, they were directly trained by Prabhupada and this and that. And they may have lost faith. They may have, for whatever reason, but one has to remember what they've done. They're at an advanced stage. So if that moment they take up that faith, they're leaders again. There's no ifs, there's no ands, there's no buts, and there's no one in this movement that can hold them back. Not one. because we have to remember that the current of devotional service flows through those who do it. It's not through an organization. It flowed through Prabhupada, therefore we have ISKCON. Prabhupada tried his best to make it, you know, part of the Chaitanya mission that his spiritual master established. But none of the others wanted to take part in the mission. So it flowed through. Yeah. So that always has to be remembered, is that faith is the real thing. If that faith is there, it moves forward. If faith is not there, it doesn't matter what position you are, what people say, nothing will go forward. His disciples or his followers or his associates or whoever. So that was that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur created the GBC with the idea that the devotees would stay together, keep the same mood and values, so that it will flow through them as a group. Because Sankirtan is always more powerful than one person. Right? Even you have one pure devotee on his own is not going to be as effective as one pure devotee and 10 assistants, even though they're not pure devotees. And if you had 10 pure devotees, I think probably once mentioned that, if you had 10 others who could do what he could do, they'd take over the world in a moment. You know. And yeah, I think you mentioned about the discussion on the battle of Kurukshetra. Won the battle in 18 days. Probably said we could make the whole planet Krishna conscious in 18 days if we had the faith. Because the instructions to follow to do it, one would have to have the faith in it. Because the general tendency is like Indra, is to go back to what you've seen work or what others did. The thunderbolt was new. It was never seen before. It was not a weapon. No one ever heard of it. No one ever seen it. Not only that, it was made out of the bones of the person that Indra himself had insulted. Right? Indra wouldn't give him some minor charity. And this person has donated his body for the benefit of Indra. Right? Very embarrassing. So you take all that, it's an unknown commodity. The thunderbolt's an unknown commodity. They can only go by faith that God said this will work. That's what they have. So that's the question. Lord Krishna said this will happen. Lord Chaitanya said it will happen. Rupa Goswami said it will happen. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Prabhupada, he wanted so many things to happen. We have the faith, it will happen. We don't have the faith, yes, then we'll take shelter of modern, you know, administrative methods, academic methods, social, all these different things that we'll do, you know. But you can do that, just like Ender did it. And then Vritrasura caught his club with his left hand, whacked his elephant, knocked him back 28, I think it was hands or something like that, which means quite a ways, and then insulted him. Didn't work. So spiritual authority comes through the instruction and vision of the acharyas. We take it up. We have the potency. It works. We don't take it up. It doesn't work. So the point is the status quo, unless it is in line with the acharyas, if it is opposed to, it will never work. Never in a million years. Never in eternity. That's the point. Intellectually, that's not satisfying. Emotionally, it's very painful to hear. As far as ego goes, who can tolerate it? But that's the way it is. God said it'll be like this. The acharyas have then shown how to do it. We follow that, it works. We don't follow that, it won't work. So we take it seriously, it'll work. Then the use of our intelligence, our mind, our senses, our ego in the Lord's service, then it's great. Fine. But that principle, that faith in their instruction, that'll do. Prabhupada wrote in his book so many things that are politically incorrect. But you say these to intelligent members of society, thoughtful members, and they will accept them. people who think they're intellectual will doubt. They're pseudo-intellectuals. They only think they're smart because they got a position or they have a degree or that. The people who are actually thoughtful, right? I mean, like I mentioned, that judge, that was the case when Prabhupada told Adi Keshava, the right 20-year-old kid, to make the point is that our society is trying to create purity because the modern society, you know, their point was brainwashing. And our point is brain needs washing. Because your society is simply a society of dogs that are licking the dripping vagina. The judge was silent for a few moments and then said, "You're right." That's a thoughtful person. And so anyone who says that these are politically incorrect, they miss the boat. And they have actually no standing in the association of serious Vaishnavas. Because unless there's faith in the Acharya, there's no question approaching the previous Acharyas. You cannot approach the previous Acharyas except through your own Acharya. You cannot. One may think, one can directly approach, you know, Jiva Goswami and say, "Well, Prabhupada said this, and it's different from Jiva." That person has never in their life approached Jiva Goswami. There's no question that Jiva Goswami will accept that person as his own. Jiva's approach through your own Acharya. If you find fault in your Acharya based on what the previous Acharya is, those previous Acharyas never for a moment will even consider you as serious. Vishwanath makes this statement. They will never, never. So that's the point, is that we have our method, and if we have faith, that's the point. Right? That's it. One who has faith in Guru and Krishna, unflinching faith, then all the imports of Vedic knowledge will be revealed. Otherwise, Maya Kuntigyana. That is the point. So it's very, very important. Faith is the basis. So basically, faith means that's the only thing you have in devotional service. And when you take up devotion, when you take up association of devotees, then you have deeper faith and you add the association of devotees. When the faith deepens more, then you take up the performance of devotional activities, bhajana kriya, in the association of devotees. When the faith goes deeper, then you give up the anarthas in the performance of your devotees in the association of devotees. When it goes deeper again, then you become fixed in your service, you know, in the association of devotees. Like this, it just keeps going. So faith is, it keeps adding. You add these other things, but faith is the one that, when it increases, then you add another one of the things. You have faith, you add more faith, then it goes to the next. Just like in the creation. When you add false ego, then you get another element come. You have false ego, and then you add again false ego as a catalyst. Then you get intelligence. You add a false ego again, then you get mind. You add false ego again, you get ether. You add a false ego again. Like this, each time you add it, then it's the catalyst, and it will take it to the next level. So faith, added more, then will take it to the next level. Add more faith, it takes it to the next level. So faith is the whole process. Because faith means what you value, what you accept.
Criticism?
Oh, the virus, yeah, criticism. That's why Vaishnava Aparad means you can do anything, any sin, any nonsense, anything in the world. It cannot stop. You may stop moving forward in devotional service, but it won't destroy devotional service. But you offend devotees, that's it. That's the only thing that will reset your devotional calculator back to zero. And because you've reset it to zero, generally it's millions of lifetimes before you get another shot at it. Now, one devotee who came to Prabhupada and said that, "I would like your blessings, I'm going to leave him in this because I found somebody more serious and all that. You know, so I want your blessings to, you know, take shelter of this guru." And Prabhupada said, "Yes, I give you your blessings that for 1 million lifetimes you will not come in contact with a bona fide guru." So that's why the, how do you say, offense to the devotees is the worst. Like that. That's the, one of the symptoms of in the Dharma Shastra on sannyas, is that they should not see, they should only see other living entities as the instruments to their gain and loss. They should never see them as the actual doers, because then they get entangled in justice and all these different things. And if you see them as lot, then you'll offend them. And if you see them as your gain, then you'll praise them. But it's all mundane, so it keeps you in the material world. So if you want to get out of the material world, you can neither materially praise someone nor feel ill will towards them. Either one will keep you here, like that. So therefore, one doesn't get angry when one is insulted. As it said, the insulted person sleeps peacefully, right? Because he is who he is. But the person who's insulted him, they perish. They're finished. So, like that. You know. But if we are attached to these things, then very much, then we suffer. And because of that, then we make others suffer. So violence, actually, when it says non-violence, it just doesn't mean just being a nice guy who doesn't hurt anything. Violence means that you, in no way, on any level, are you creating any disturbance for somebody that's not according to Shastra. Right? It means you dig a potato out of the ground, of course the potato isn't as happy as if it had been in the ground. But harvesting vegetables and then cooking them and offering to God is sanctioned by Shastra. So even though you could say it's violence, it's not violence. Right? Or chastising a student or a disciple or a dependent may seem to be violent, but if it's according to Guru Sadhana Shastra, it's not violence. Like that. Or you engage, you know, other living entities in activities that are painful for them, right? Either, you know, you've been menial service or other things that they don't like to do. You know, you have to sit down and chant your japa, you know, or you have to. But it may seem like violence, you know, on the emotional platform. But if it's sanctioned by Shastra, it's not violence. Like that. And, you know, and so then, and the ultimate of that is giving someone Krishna consciousness. That's the best welfare. And not giving him Krishna consciousness, that's the greatest violence. So therefore, if one doesn't give one's dependence Krishna consciousness, then one is actually violent. Or one doesn't give oneself Krishna consciousness, one is not. That's atmahata, killer of the soul. Like that. That's why it says don't become, you know, a parent or any kind of authority that has dependence unless you can save the dependence from death. Because otherwise it's violence. We brought them in for our own purposes. But we are not giving them God consciousness, so there's violence. These are very subtle forms. But if we're dealing with them according to Guru Sadhana Shastra, then it's not violence, even though they may feel it's violence. You know, it's so rough, or why do I have to do this, or why do I have to chant, why can't I go out and just play all day? Why, you know, like this, they may feel that this is not nice. You know, or why do we have to, you know, put in 8 hours of service a day as a temple devotee? Why can't we just do 3? You know, and even that, you know, only when I want to. And even that, only what I want to. You know, and then if the temple commander says, no, you got to get up out of bed, you got to do this, you got to clean the pots, you got to like that, then they may feel as violent. You know, because violence is greater than physical. Right? So then that means it goes both ways, materially and spiritually. Right? You deal with somebody that emotionally they become disturbed on the material platform, and then that's material violence. But at the same time, you don't give them Krishna conscious emotional interaction and platform, that's also violence. That's spiritual neglect. And you will suffer for that. like that. So all these points, they all go both ways. So what is sanctioned by Shastra, that's non-violence, even though it may appear to be violent. But what's not sanctioned by violence, even if it's non-violent, it's violence. You just breathe, you kill millions of living animals. You walk, you kill millions of living animals. You sweep, you pour water, drink water, start a fire. You know, grind something, put it in your mixie. You know, you kill it. You know, imagine how many living entities are, you know, in that, you know, your whatever it is, that pot that you just put in the refrigerator and froze. Violence is, the material world is violence. That's why it's called the place of death. Mritya Loka. It's just death. That's all there is. But if it's according to Shastra, then it's not death. Because then the person, whoever that seeming violence is on, they get the same benefit as the person who has done the service. So the temple commander is coming and telling you, hey, you know what, you know, wash your pots. Don't just sit around and talk to Jalpa. Then you think, oh, I saw this and that. But then they get the benefit. They become serious in devotional service, that they get the benefit. So they become serious like the temple commander. So they get the benefit. You know, the potato gets the same benefit. The person who cooked it, offered it, honored it, the potato gets the same benefit. Right? And not only that, it did all three of them, right? It got cooked, it got offered, and it got eaten. So it gets the benefit of all three, while someone else might have only done one, right? So even the potato is in a better position. Right? You could start a potato bar, right? Yeah. Like the best position is potato, right? Because now, look at it this way. Now, of all days, Ekadasi is the most special, right? And on Ekadasi, you don't offer any grains, right? And according to some theories, then Ekadasi means potatoes, right? So now, what can be, and Ekadasi is the mother of devotion, so what could be more ideal for devotional service to be a potato that is cooked and offered and eaten on Ekadasi, right? We will. Today, yes, the potatoes, because today is Nirjal, so no one's even eating the potatoes. Who cares for these potatoes? But the next Ekadasi. Can't win them all. Okay, they get how many? They get, means to have 24, right? 24? 24 Ekadasi. So at least, okay, you get 23. You know, it's material world, you never get perfect, you know. So.
Mind is a donkey.
Mind is a donkey. Yeah. Oh, Saravi Maharaj is telling a funny story. It's about donkeys, how they don't want to walk. Just how dull they are. He was saying in Vrindavan, when they were doing the foundations for the temple there, the Krishna Balaram temple, so they take the dirt out of the holes, they use donkeys. Like here, the people will just do it. But there, a couple of people load it on the donkeys and they'll carry it out. So in the winter there, it's cold, and donkeys just don't want to move. They just won't move. You can come up, push them, hit them with a stick, anything. Grab them, pull them, they won't move. So what they have to do is they start a small fire underneath them. And then they'll move. Because once they start moving, they'll move all day. But that initial moving, so that's the mind, yeah. You need to start a little fire under it, you know. Then once it's moving, it's okay. That's why sometimes the temple commanders use a little fire. Anything else?
Speaking about the about serving devotees, you can be alone, like in front of the deities, or in your meditation. So in that relationship, Sri Chanting, Hare Krishna, please engage me in your service. So in that, in that meditation,
stop. So the point is on the chanting is, since it's in the association of devotees, so the chanting is, we want to be in the engaged in Krishna's service. That's the Prabhupada gave that as the meaning of the Maha Mantra. So is that meaning just in Krishna's service and in service of Krishna's devotees? It also just gives rise to a side point, or clarification, just even in the being alone and rendering service, one's still not actually fully alone, because one's following the instruction of one's authority. So in that way, even Narad Muni is not fully alone here. So even if one is alone, if one's following the instructions, one's with the devotees. You know, so sometimes one's in situations where one is physically alone, but one follows the order and one is appreciative of. What we're speaking on is those that may want to be away from devotees and don't want to associate with devotees, in principle, like that. You know, but they may have situations where, you know, they need to, for their service, they may not be with somebody. So in the chanting, because the chanting then takes different stages. In the beginning we hear, then from hearing we see the form of Krishna. That's the next. And that deepens then with the qualities, and from the qualities of pastimes. And so the point of pastimes, and that means devotees. And our entrance into pastimes is through the devotees. So naturally, if that comes in the beginning, that we want that service in the association of the devotees, then that's good. You know, then it's, that mentality is already developed. But if not, then at the stage of when the name is in the platform of qualities, I mean in the platform of pastimes, then one has to acknowledge and work in that. So that makes some sense. So then, because that is the point, is that to get into the pastimes, you get into the pastimes through the devotees. We don't get in straight. We can't just barge in and like, here we are, you know. You can't crash the party. Because we always hear Krishna has doorkeepers. So those doorkeepers are always there. We can't get into Golok, you know, unless it's through the devotees. Like that, they have those tridents there that will catch anybody who's trying to come in otherwise. Like that. Because if it's without the devotees, it's actually impersonal. Like that. Because there's no such thing as Krishna and no devotees. Because if we have ideas, Krishna and me, but then who am I? If I'm a devotee, that means then there's other devotees. God being unlimited means there's unlimited devotees. So it's either there's no devotees or there's unlimited. You can't have just me. So then it will come. So, but the trick is to understand that principle and have that desire before one gets to that point. Otherwise, then one has to learn it at that point. Like, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes the point that Trinadapi Suni Chena, that verse, is our Swarup Siddhi. Now someone may say, okay, very nice, you know, heard that. Okay, now what about my, you know, spiritual form, and what does it look like, and what age, and what group, and what, you know, all these different things. But that won't have any meaning unless the verse Trinadapi Suni Chena is fully imbibed. If that's fully imbibed, the other one automatically comes. But if that's not fully imbibed, one may get there and one will be stuck there. Because there's no benefit of being stuck at that point. One has to move forward. Otherwise, that's what happened to the gopis. They were not associating with Krishna's associates. Therefore, they couldn't go to the rasa dance. Those who were associating with the eternal associates, they went. So the ones that didn't go were the ones that didn't associate. Why they didn't associate? They didn't have the desire. They were just happy in their devotional service. But devotional service has no satiation. So one's never, one is simultaneously satisfied, but at the same time, never satisfied. Because you can more and more, and the taste increases. Material, you're never satisfied. The more you deal with it, the more you become dissatisfied, because it has no substance. But spiritual has substance. So as you deal with it, the taste increases. But because it you want more. You know, no one wants more and more dissatisfaction. Right? So therefore, it means, but one wants more and more satisfaction. But because it's unlimited, therefore you can't be satisfied. There's no satiation. Is that making sense? So if one starts all this early, understands the principle is that associating with the devotees and serving the devotees is the most important thing, dasana, dasana, das, then that means the process will actually be speeded up. Because then our desire is to become the servant of the servants of the Lord. That will take us through very quickly. Because generally we can relate to them very easily. Krishna is unique. Prabhupada makes the point, you know, is that he's in his own category. It means we call material and spiritual so we can make a distinction for our intelligence. But it's all Brahman. But Krishna being the source of Brahman, he's something, he is Brahman, but being the source of Brahman, he's in his own category. He is unique. So therefore, we being spiritual, we can relate with spiritual. So therefore, we can relate to the devotees. So we can approach Krishna as the devotees. And the prototype devotees, they, because they're directly expanded from those aspects of Krishna's mood, they can understand those moods. So our entrance into that relationship with Krishna is through them. Otherwise, it's not there. Is how would we know how to serve Krishna in parental ras if there was no mother to show them? There'd be no question of knowing. You know, like that. You know, it's like, okay, so then we, you know, baby's crying, so then you deal with it. You know, and then now it's peaceful and it's sleeping, so then you put it in bed, and then, you know, then the rocking, and then you get the nanny to come in and watch it while you sneak out to the spa. Right? But, so that would be, if we take how, you know, someone who wanted to serve Krishna parental ras, if they go by what they experience, this is what they might be doing there. You know, and then when Krishna is 6 months old, then you send him to the daycare. Right? And then you go out and go to your clubs and hang out with your friends and go shopping and do all those important things that, you know, are meaningful to you. You know, I mean, we have to be ourselves. It's us. You know, that's us. So they have an identity other than mother of the child. But Mother Yashoda has no other identity. Therefore, she is the perfect mother. Everything she does is for her son. Even, you know, dressing and looking beautiful is because then, you know, kids like beautiful mothers. Right? That's what it is. It's just they like it. Right? Kids like nice things, right? And so then nice mothers. You know? So like that. And of all beauty, then the mood is the most beautiful. So when they really have that affection, that's the most beauty. So it's not physical. So going out to the spa is to impress their husband or whoever else they're trying to impress. Right? So therefore, without that person, how would there be any idea of what is parental rasa? There would be no clue. Otherwise, attachment, when the attachment mood is there, then you'll deal. But when the attachment is to something else, you leave it. Right? Like dogs. You see dogs. You know, they'll be nursing the puppies. And then they see something to eat. The mother dog stands right up and walks off and leaves the puppies sitting right there. In dog society, that's a great mother. Right? She gave at least a little time. So when the attachment is there, the puppies are whining, and she doesn't have something else distracting her, you know, and eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then she goes to the puppies. And then when she's distracted by eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then she leaves the puppies. So how would we know what is motherhood unless we see Mother Yashoda? Like that. So therefore, we have to approach Krishna through the devotees. There's no question. We wouldn't have a clue how to serve in any of the rasas. That's why we have to follow in the footsteps of a resident of Vrindavan. Because you have to follow in the footsteps of the devotees if you want to get into the spiritual world and serve the Lord. Then depending upon what realm, you have to follow those devotees in that realm. You want to go to Vaikuntha, you have to follow the devotees of Vaikuntha. You want to go to Vrindavan, you follow the devotees of Vrindavan. Then depending upon what particular service you want to do, you have to follow those devotees. Then within that, then this gets more and more detailed. Then it becomes... So therefore, we're followers of Rupa Goswami. So we don't have to worry, well, who do I follow with Rupa Goswami? Like that. He is that resident of Vrindavan. And our connection to Rupa is through our Acharya. So through Prabhupada, then we can approach Rupa. Like that. So like that, then, you know, it becomes very clear. So if in our chanting we understand that service to Krishna means service to his devotees, then very quickly then we'll come to that platform where we'll be able to exercise that service to the devotees. Like that. And if not, then if we're sincere and good association, then just by nature, the holy name will reveal that to us. And then we'll take it up.
Does that make sense? The question of Guru Janadivas, some semantics there. Sometimes you say, you perform, you ask Krishna to perform service for Krishna, or the service of Krishna. Krishna has no service for himself.
Yeah.
He always performs the service for the devotees. So if you want to do service for Krishna, you have to help him to serve the devotees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So serving the devotee, yeah. Krishna's service. When you say also Krishna's service, it also can mean, it can either mean Krishna's meaning, what is belonging to him means what he is doing, or it can mean what is done for him. Yeah, either it can mean either. But in either way, it comes back to devotees. Because Krishna serves the devotees. And the devotees are serving Krishna. And so, and we're serving them. So if we want to serve Krishna, we have to serve the devotees. And if we want to please Krishna through service, then we have to serve the devotees. So in either case, it does come back to that point. Yeah, you can't get around it. Looks like just one of those things we're just going to have to accept. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Leela, obviously, that makes sense. But like in the, if you're chanting for realization of love, or like Narayan, he's meditating on the Lord, the form of the Lord is where does the devotee part?
Where does the devotee part here in with Narad? Or where does the devotees come into it? Devotees come into it because you always see him refer back to the Bhakti Vedantas. It's by following their instructions, by then he has attained whatever perfection that he's come to. So then those devotees will always be there, those Bhakti Vedantas. So that's the principles that it always comes back to those devotees. So who's connected us, who inspires us to be connected, who inspires us in our service, you know, being connected, this is our circle, this is our sphere. So we find that like-minded circle where we're inspired and all that. And then that's our, you know, close circle. So our nirjan, bhajan goes on in that circle. So we may be surrounded by so many people. Yeah, that's why the Pancharatrik system, because we follow Pancharatrik, is that you can only worship the deity if you worship the spiritual master. So that means anyone who's following the Pancharatrik process must perform Guru Puja. So the Pujari automatically follows it in the following the rituals of the, you know, Panchanga Puja. When he does yoga, he has to respect the Guru and do worship of the Guru. But those devotees who may not be involved directly in the the deity worship on the altar, because they're still worshiping the deity through darshan and singing and kirtan and their service. They still have to worship Guru. Therefore, then Guru Puja becomes put in. So it is a pancharatrik item. It's just the system. In the others, those others who follow pancharatra, when you get initiated, you get a set of deities. So therefore, automatically, your Guru Puja and your worship of the deity is there. But because for us, the Bhagavad is the most important as a process, then it shouldn't be encumbered by the pancharatra. So therefore, a few devotees will worship the deity basically on behalf of everybody else, and the others, by seeing that, they get the same benefit. And then they can concentrate on other aspects of the preaching mission. So but still, the pancharatrik principles of worshiping the guru has to be there. Therefore, Prabhupada's system that he created, you can't get a more perfect system. There is not a more perfect system like that. Sometimes devotees want to go look here and there, and that there isn't a more perfect system. And it so perfectly, seamlessly interfaces between Bhagavat, Pancharatrik, and Vedic. It's seamless. You can move from one to the next effortlessly if you understand the principles. If you understand the philosophy, the principles that it's working on, the culture, there's no difference. You can situate yourself in any one and you get the perfection of the other.
Introduction of Guru Ashtakam in the Mongol Arch. First, at the time of the Mongol Arch, you have seen the Prabhupada. Everybody comes in person and
worship of Guru. Yeah. And that's just, and that worship of Guru is part of the thing that you're basically, is that's Guru Punkti Namaskar. Is that you're, through the Guru, you understand that whatever you're going to do is through him. By his grace, you're connecting. Because there was once a time when someone was making, somehow or another, it's funny, it's a dual standard, so you can understand it's mundane. There's duality there. Is that they didn't want any worship of the present gurus. So they said, you're singing a Guru Vastika and Mangalarti is Guru Puja to your Guru. But at the same time, if we were to follow that, then we should stop the Guru Puja for Prabhupada, because we're also singing for him. Right? But that remains. But to the others, it shouldn't. Because within the Pancharatra, you have Guru Punkti Namaskar, where the first thing you do is sit down and you take his blessings, that anything else you're going to do is under his direction. Then you're going to, when you're ready, then do Guru Puja. You actually worship through the ritual. Then you're going to worship the deity. So therefore, both have to be there. So as Prabhupada so expertly understood the principles of each thing and worked it in, and in such a simple way that anybody can do it. The most sophisticated, the most intellectual, the most pro-Vedic, down to the simplest person who doesn't know anything about all these things. Anybody can do it. You know, the simple person living in their place can follow the temple program, or you have a big temple and elaborate with all rituals can be followed. So it's so perfect, you know. And to like project oneself or catapult oneself into the Bhagavad Marg, then all these rituals of the Pancharatrik so perfectly do it. That someone who's just, all he does is just preach, he still follows the same program as someone who just does puja does. It's so perfect. And the principles, the Vedic system also has the same things. But for us, our ritual, the central is Pancharatrik. So it's already, what's already covered in the Pancharatrik, we don't have to separately cover in the Vedic. The Pancharatrik doesn't deal with samskar, Vedic, so we use those. But when it comes to initiation, we use Pancharatrik. Or when it comes to ways of performing ritual, we use Pancharatrik. Or a mix, you know, as Krishna mentions in Bhagavatam. So then it becomes very perfect, the whole. So what Prabhupada's made is so perfect that from one to the other, the whole thing blends so wonderfully. There isn't a better system. Otherwise, why does it work? And anybody else takes it, it works. Even those who are inimical to ISKCON, all they have to do is follow what ISKCON does, and bingo, they have, you know, money and devotees coming out their ears. Facilities, temples, that's all. Even though their mood towards Prabhupada's movement hasn't changed in the least. But they just fall, and they've been doing what they've been doing since 19, you know, what is it? I don't know what it is. Some say it was 2 years after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left, and some say it's 8 years after he left, that they dismantled the GBC. But in any case, since the 1940s, they've been following the principle that they've been doing since the 1940s, and everything's the same as it was then, if not worse. Right? But the same people just take up Prabhupada's method, apply it into their sphere, bang! World preachers, devotees coming from all over, money, temples, facilities, recognition, everything. That's because there's no more perfect system. There's nothing more perfect. I think there's a conversation or something in Lilamrita. I think some devotee had asked Prabhupada in the 70s, you know, would you have done anything, now knowing what, you know, the whole thing is and the Westerners and the whole scenario, would you have done anything different? Prabhupada sat for a moment and said, not one thing. He would have done everything exactly the same. So therefore it's perfect. You follow his books, you follow his program, it's perfect. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. That's just so nice about it. Why do you say? Foolproof, right? Because we're the fools, right? So it's got to be able to run despite us. That's the whole thing is like that. That's why it's that to get too worried about it is not important. You know? It's been set up, it works. You know? The Madhvas are still functioning 800 years after their Acharya. The Ramanujas, 1200 years. The Nimbarkas, 5000 years. Right? Just because they just stick to what he gave. Yeah. And they're not worried that, you know, my guru is not, you know, the Uttamadhikari dropped out of the spiritual realm and this and that, Nityasiddha, blah, blah. They're not worried about that because they know we got our Nityasiddha. We had Nimbarka, Ramanuja, Vishnu Swami. We follow their instruction under the direction of the senior Vaishnavas and guaranteed because they made a program that will get you to where they want you to go. Right? And their program will get you to those places. But Prabhupada's program will get you to Braj Vrindavan. That's what's unique about that. We just follow it, we go. So we don't have to worry. We just associate with like-minded devotees that are more advanced than us. And if everybody does that, it works. Right? Because each one's associating at some point it gets back there. You know? And so the current works. The chit potency flows. That's the point, is to be a vital media for the chit potency. Because God decides who the chit potency flows through, not us. Right? And God's decided it moves through Madhyamas. Right? Not Uttamas, not Kanistas. So therefore, a preacher has to take the occupation and mood of a preacher, even if he's a neophyte, even if he's an Uttama. That's the beauty of it. Our neophyte devotees, they just walked in the door, but they live the lifestyle and have the mood and purpose and drive of a Madhyama. Even though by realization, they're neophyte. Right? And an Uttamadhikari then takes on the occupation and mood and vision of the Madhyama, not the Uttama. But because his realization is of the Uttama, he's a better Madhyama than a Madhyama. Well, a neophyte is a less efficient Madhyama than a Madhyama. Therefore, it said, always associate with those who are more advanced. But to say the system won't work, that's for the uneducated. Like that. It sounds good, it's got a political purpose, like that or some emotional purpose, but it doesn't have any, it doesn't serve any Shastra purpose, because Shastra says different. And unfortunately, God made the Shastra, not us, so when push comes to shove, I guess we've got to kind of acquiesce to his superior position. Or cheating, yeah. Uneducated, either unknowing, you know, they've been distracted, or they're cheating. Yeah, they have an ulterior motive. But main thing is ourselves, we generally don't, we point out that the two are there, but we generally don't judge, unless it's so obvious. If someone's really proven themselves as such. But otherwise, we always take even something that seeming obviously is hypocrisy, as just, you know, weakness of heart and other, you know, just a devotional weakness. So we won't judge like that. So our tendency is to take everybody as devotees, even though they may not be like that. But it doesn't mean that we're fools. We're careful. It means if somebody doesn't act properly, we don't associate too closely. Like that. We stick to those who give us that inspiration, who acts properly, or at least has the right mentality. Because it's said, you can get gold from even a dirty place, so you might have a devotee who's very convinced about something that they themselves can't do. Right? Like you have a devotee who's convinced that, you know, honoring Prasad is, you know, very important. So he himself is always just worried about the taste, fighting over this and that. But from him we can get the inspiration. Yes, I should take it more seriously, my honoring of Prasad. You know, because Prasad is so important. His inspiration is his material attachment. So maybe his material attachment hasn't waned enough for what he speaks and what he does to match. But at least that determination of faith, we can gain that. Better is the person who says it and practices it. That's why it was said, Haridas Thakur was so perfect. Some practice, don't preach. Some preach, don't practice. But Haridas Thakur, he does both. And so therefore, Sanatana Goswami accepted him as his senior. Is it possible to pass through the
Ayogya
pastimes?
Because many devotees who are in Ayogya pastimes also perform pastimes in Raj and in Chaitanya Lila. Or is
generally,
just
no, they're generally different. See, is that those means Chaitanya Lila is the common platform where devotees from different realms may meet. But actually, in the passage, you don't find Hanuman in Braj. Right? But in Dwarka. But Dwarka is counted as Vaikuntha. Dwarka is Vaikuntha. Mathura is a little kind of mystical in that it's not Braj and it's not Dwarka. They may come and visit, you may be seen like this, but the actual interaction is different. So therefore, but Hanuman, these other realms come from, Vaikuntha is expanded from Dwarka. Dwarka is expanded from Mathura from Vrindavan. Right? So that means there's personality in Vrindavan who they are the source of that personality in the other Lila. Or maybe even many of them. Yeah, because just like there's one Krishna, but then there's unlimited avatars. And each has this different mood and pastime. Like that, so it goes back. As far as I know, I think it's the... I'm not sure if it's Gotamiya Tantra. No, I don't think it's Gotamiya Tantra. Garga Samhita mentions that Sudam and Sridam, they're Garuda and Hanuman. Means part of their personality is Guru and Hanuman. That's why I think there's some pastime in Braj Lila where the cowherd boys wanted to see Vishnu. Like that. And so then I think Sridam then took the form of Garuda And then Krishna took four arms, got his back, and flew around, and all the way, wow, hey, that was great, okay, you know, hey, okay, you know, what else, you know, you know, like that, you know. But it doesn't change their mood, it's still, they just want to see, you know, it's so fun, you know, but it's kind of like, hey, Krishna can do all these neat tricks, you know, he kills the demons, he does this. Yeah, but it's not like they all stood there with four arms and all that. They're just probably whistling and clapping and, wow, hey, you know, hey, hey, can I go for a spin, you know? It's kind of like, you know, so like that. So that means that's where the origin is. So it transforms. Because to go through the pastime, one might get stuck there. Or might get attracted there. Because those devotees, it's perfect there. Why would you want to go somewhere else? Like you see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think it's in Antyalila. I think it's Antyalila, maybe it's Madhyalila, where there's that whole discussion. Rath Yatra. No, it's Madhyalila. No, Rath Yatra is in Antyalila. Madhya, that conversation. Where Vaishrivas Thakur and Sri Damodar. Srivas Thakur is saying, Braj, what's it? Just some sticks and some dirt and, you know, a few trees and some cows, you know, just what's the big deal? But our Vaikuntha, oh, the opulence and the that. We know how to worship God, you know. You guys just get out, you know, it's just, you don't do any worship of God. You just hang around and this and that, you know, like that. We're serious. You're not serious, you know. It's just like if you're playing around, you're not serious. And we get serious and we get sober and formal and everything gets pakad, like that. So we're the serious worshipers of Vishnu. You guys have to lunch. And then Sudamana says, yeah, says that the, just one grain of dust in Vrindavan is the source of all the opulence of Vaikuntha. So all your opulence, that's just dust in Vrindavan. And all those trees, it says, they're the source of all the opulence. But because the residents of Vrindavan are satisfied, they only want to just please Krishna. They don't, they're not interested. So therefore they just go and add, pick some fruit and flowers. And the cows could provide anything, but they just take some milk. Right? The tree can produce palaces and anything, gold, jewels, the cow can do the same. They just take milk from the cow, some fruits and flowers from the tree, you know, and just walk barefoot on the dust of Vrindavan. So he pointed out that it's actually superior. So it's all there. So you, the point is, you go there, then they'll tell you to stay there. Because that option is there. You want to see the heavenly planets, you want to see this, you want to see, you can see any of them. But that means there's an interest. But if you really want to go to Braj, means no interest in anything else. Like that. That's the very serious. Because one can go to these other realms by less. The Braj is straight. Like you'll see, is that Gopukumar is going through all these different realms. You know, he's searching, he's going. Like that. But when he actually understands that Braj is what he's looking for, that is direct. There's nothing in between. It's just immediate. You don't bother. Okay. But Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, you want to see, you can see. You can even get off and go have a look around. Problem is, you might get attracted. That's why generally the Vrajavasis don't, yeah, they don't bother with anything else. They're just because they know where they want to go, they just want to go there. And because whatever is there in any other realm is already in Vraj. It's already there. There's no lack. It means it's, that's what's so wonderful about it, is that all other pastimes are expansion of the Vrindavan pastime. All other forms of Purusha and Shri are expansions from Braj. So they're all there in their little part. In another place it becomes the predominant. You know? Like that. But in there, it's just like, that probably gives an example of the high court judge. He is, at home, he's a high court judge. He's not something different. But because the interaction with his family is more prominent, therefore the aspect of the judge becomes reduced down to practically minimal. You know? And only now and again it might come up, you know? There might be something told to friends, or the wife is, you know, complaining, you're a high court judge, how can we go pull in more money? You know, like that. Something, you know? But other than that, then that's about it. you know, he gets no more reverence. If he was a high court judge, or if he was, you know, how you say, you know, a construction laborer, you know, they still get the same attention. You know, they were, the affection that's there is reciprocated. So, but now and again it may come up in his activities in the home. Small, it has its place. Like that. So then, you know, the kids get into an argument or some others, so then they decide, okay, you're the judge, you know, so now you gotta work this out when they plead their case. You know, but it's all a joke. So the same way as all the aspects of Vaikuntha and all these other avatars, they're there in Vrindavan Leela, but they're there in these jokes form. You know, Krishna's there with the gopis, and the gopis say, we know you, you don't care about women, like that. You cut off Suparnika's nose, you banished Sita the forest when she was pregnant for no fault on her own. You know, we know you. So all the other pastimes are present there.
It's not like if you have an amount of punya, you cannot call punya, amount of accumulation of emotional service. It's not if you don't fulfill the goal to reach Vrindavan, and you just going from other places according to you.
Oh, no. Means
determination.
Means you have a particular Ishtadeva, so you go to that place. So it's just a matter of that maturity, but increases till fully matured, right? Like that. When the devotee is fully mature, the total service counted together makes him eligible to enter into the association of the Personality of Godhead. Means he wants to go to Vrindavan when it's matured, but it takes, may take more maturity to get into Vrindavan, less maturity into Dwarka, less than that into Vaikuntha. Like that. So then that maturity is there. So one keeps that. It's not that, oh, okay, it's not like a mundane thing is you have a test and okay, you didn't get 100%, so therefore you can't get into this university and end into this course. You can't be a doctor or... So therefore, you know, you have to go to this university, and you can go in for liberal arts, you know, like that. It's you have your goal, and you just work at it because it's not a one shot deal. You don't perfect it this life; you continue next life. You perfect it this life, you go. You perfect it next life, you go. Yeah, that's better to continue rather than, yeah, lose it and go to somewhere. If I can't make it there, okay, I'll go here. You know, because that's the point. Is wherever it's set, the lowest setting, that's where you go. You know, like a one devotee would always, you'd always hear him, you know, he'd always just chant Narayan. I said, aren't you worried if you go to chant Narayan's name because if you're so practiced at the time of death you may chant Narayan's name and go to Vaikuntha? So what's the problem? You go back to Godhead. So for him, he didn't see any of the scenes. As long as you go back to Godhead, it was good enough for him. So the automatic setting is Vaikuntha. And there's a good chance, because he's a worshipper of Krishna, he'll go to the Vaikuntha planet where the 20 of the 24 avatars, 24 Vishnumurtis, is named Krishna. Like that. So like that, he'll be there. But he didn't care. Because he didn't see the speciality of Braj or of Ayodhya or Dwarka. You know, he didn't have any specific. It was just, he wanted to worship Vishnu and he wanted out of the material world. So, you know, if that's going to get me there, that's good enough. But the point is what's being given as special is Braj.
I think there's no love.
Vaikuntha, yes, there's no love. She comes to Sri, but that mood is not there. You know, like that. So that's what's lacking. So one has to keep focused. Then one gets. Unless you're focused, then you don't get what you want. You end up with something else.
Krishna, should not
get two forms. Yeah. You, means you get two, means you go to Navadvip and to Vrindavan. Yeah. Because worship of Radha Krishna and worship of Lord Chaitanya is synonymous. There's no difference. So they have to go together. Now some may say, well, you know, means there are those who worship Radha and Krishna and don't worship Lord Chaitanya, like the Nimarkas, and we won't say the Nimarkas are bogus. Right? Now, you can approach a few angles. Means more indirect, as Nimbarka was also a servant, a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. So indirectly, they're also involved, though they don't know it. But in the direct sense, is that it's different, in that this is what hasn't been given before. The Radha and Krishna, in spontaneous devotional service, of worship of Radha Krishna as a maidservant in Vrindavan, that Nimbarka gave, that has already been given. Lord Chaitanya has given something else. So that Krishna, you can't worship without Lord Chaitanya. You do, you're a demon. Because you can't separate the love that a boy has for the girl to the point where that love is so intense he takes on the mood of that girl in his meditation. You deny that, you don't know what is Radha and Krishna in Braj. Therefore, it's demoniac. You can't have it separate. And you can't worship Radha and Krishna as Krishna is in that mood of Radharani, thinking of how Radharani is serving Krishna. So both are there. So to worship Lord Chaitanya without Radha and Krishna, that would also be you don't understand the mood. Therefore, for us, then you can't separate the two. The one means the other. Because the mood of service of Radharani is so intense. It means that Krishna that we know is only there because of Radharani. And it means Brajaradha. So Brajaradha creates such an intense drawing of rasa from Krishna that even he's bewildered by it. He's the ocean of rasa, but she pulls the whole ocean. Any other form of Radharani or any other expansion of Radharani pulls only part of the ocean. She pulls the full ocean. So that means what you see, what she sees, that Govinda, Gopinath, Madan Mohan, only she sees it. No one else sees it. So if you're not standing in line behind her, you don't see it. There's no question we see Govinda, Gopinath, Madan Mohan, that Radharani sees from her own eyes. You don't see it through her, you don't see. That is what has not been given. That is so powerful that Krishna is so bewildered that he wants to know what is that mood and taste of that person who draws that affection out of him. So her attraction to him, her attachment to him, and what she gains from the service to him. That is what he wants to taste. Therefore, Govinda Gopinath Madan Mohan. Her attraction for her creates Madan Mohan. Her attachment to him creates Gopinath. Her service to him creates Govinda. That's what's special. There's no question of approaching that without Lord Chaitanya, because that Radharani, how will you know? Because you have to approach Krishna to get Radharani. Right? Only Krishna can give his devotees. But if you want Braja Radharani, you can only get Braja Radharani by Braja Krishna. Right? Another manifestation of Krishna is not going to give you Braja Radharani. So therefore, how are you going to get? So there's no entrance. It's never been given. So only when Krishna himself comes in her mood, then through the internal potency, then Krishna, Braja Krishna, becomes only, and only Braja Radharani can get the mercy of Braja Krishna. So you can't approach either of them. So when Krishna comes in that mood, therefore the devotee is available, that wins his heart, that gives Radharani, that gives that Braja Krishna. So his mood of Radharani then pleases him as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. as Krishna. Therefore, you get liberation. Therefore, you get the service of Radharani, who gives you the service of Krishna. So that's what's special. Therefore, you can't approach without Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No question. Like that. Therefore, to go off from these other sampradayas, it's a loss. But everybody has their taste. We're not going to complain. We have our taste, so we're not going to compromise that. Others can do what they like. Therefore, also, you want to go to Braj, but depends even within Braj who you want to see. Because Krishna, when he interacts with Mother Yashoda, is different than when he interacts with Shidam Sudam. It's different than with Mother Mangala. It's different with Subal. So you want to see Raja Krishna in that form that Radharani sees. Then we have a line called Dasana, 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 Dasana. Yeah. Gopi Bhartu Parakamalayor, Dasana, Dasana. That's the thing. We follow Acharyas, following Rupa, following, Radharani. Then you see. Then it's clear by media. What she sees, you see.
And you can also see all the others.
In between, yeah. You can see all the others at the same time you see all the way through. That's the thing about it. But you see all the way through because they're looking through. It means we're not greater than them. So if our Acharya is focusing on the service for Radharani, then that means we will see through that. But when they're focused on, then we can see all the way through. When that service is being offered, Therefore, that's why generally the mood is when we want to go, but the hint is made with Raktak. He's serving and ecstasies are coming and he's cursing the ecstasies because he can't see to do his service. So in our mood, we don't care about, that we want to do this intimate service, this and that. That's not the point. The intimate service will be rendered. But at any moment, any intimate service is dropped to make arrangements to render the next intimate service. Someone is there fanning Radha and Krishna and they're told, leave that fan, go pick flowers. And it's like, oh, but it's so nice, and why do we have to pick flowers? No, you just go pick flowers. Because you had a 20-minute window to redress Radharani so that she looks like she's never even been touched by Krishna. So when Lalita shows up, Radharani can have the fun that they haven't even gotten together. So Lalita's coming back expecting that the perfection of Madan Mohan has happened. And it hasn't. Because Radharani is looking perfectly dressed as she was when she left him. And that only happened because they left the fanning, all these intimate service to go pick the flowers. So like that. Then you see, and then the ecstasy that Radharani has when Lalita comes and is shocked, that you feel. Otherwise, you're stuck there with your fan and you won't be asked, and that's all the more you'll get, and you won't feel that ecstasy. So that's why that line is there. That's that being in that line is so important. That's what's being given. That's what may or may not be understood. But it's a matter of, it's not just seeing Krishna, it's seeing what form of Krishna and through whose ecstasy. Okay, we see Krishna, we as a jiva will experience a certain amount of ecstasy. And basically speaking, it's unlimited. But you can't say it's going to be as much as Radharani, who is the Swarup Shakti, is going to experience. Because we're included in her. So our ecstasy, she already is tasting. We only add that we're part of her ecstasy. So we're limited to that. Though it's unlimited. But if you're a servant of a servant, then our ecstasy is her ecstasy. And in fact, the farther back you go, you see all the ones in between. You see their ecstasy, so your ecstasy is greater. So 1,000 times removed, you get 1,000 times more ecstasy than the one in the front. Therefore, the farther back, there's no loss. that's it's exactly opposite of the material world. The closer you get, the better it is. But in the spiritual part of that, therefore, then Krishna and Radha, they like to serve also, because they like to take those. So even Lord Chaitanya generally was tasting the mood of Radharani, but sometimes was tasting the mood of the maidservants. Like when he's picking flowers, he would taste those moods. And he would see Radha and Krishna separately, because that also has a mood. So that is the via media. So there's no difference. So what is experienced there, then we can experience, even though that physical proximity is not there. That's means, oh, we're following when Acharya will develop his mood. Yeah, like that. But either, it can be either from the Siksha or Diksha line. Just like we see Shamananda. Diksha line means going to Vrindavan and serving Krishna, that mood of surrender and service, and that he gets from his own guru, as a Hridaya Chaitanya. But the actual specifics of his service, then he gets from, I think, Jiva Goswami, which is coming to Rupa. So it will be the mood of your child. You just have to see what that mind is. May not be. No. In theory, you could have, the spiritual master can be in a different rasa. Whether it happens, generally, it's not that, in theory, it can. Like, we're getting a glimpse into the Bhagavatam, Lord's pastimes, from Sukadeva Goswami, who's a parrot. He's in Shantaras. Like that. Or instruction, you know, here, this is Narad Muni, who's in Dasyaras. You know. So, it means, that's the point, is that the devotees have no problem tasting from anywhere. That's the thing, is that they hear the story of Mother Yashoda, they taste rasa with Krishna, but they see it through their medium. Just like the mother, she will basically appreciate the son's happiness he has playing with his friends. But the taste she gets in appreciating that is the motherly taste that is her son. And he's happy. But she'll appreciate the other rasa. So that's the point where Prabhupada made, is this idea that we only read, you know, the Panchadhyaya, the 10th canto, the Gopi's pastime, the Krishna, and all this Dwarka we don't read. No, you give to the you know, the Gopis, you know, these other pastimes, Mathura, Dwarka, or even Ayodhya, and they'll appreciate, they'll taste rasa because it's their Krishna. They can't interact with them there. But that's the point, that it's Lord Chaitanya, it's not given. Nimbarka did not give separation. Right? And, yeah, he did not give separation. Because even though it's there, he hides it. It's only for a mood, but they're actually together. Because otherwise it breaks the mood of Ananda. You know? And that's the point, they always want to be happy. Well, to agree that unhappiness will be ecstasy, that takes greater faith and greater affection. So that's the point. That's why Lord Chaitanya leaves here to go to Puri. Because this is Vrindavan. Krishna is here. He can be seen. But in Puri, that's Krishna. But because of the environment, he can't reciprocate with you as Braja Krishna. How much more painful? Right? The boy and the girl are separated. Okay, that's bad. But let us say they're in the same room together with all kinds of other people, and they can't interact, they can't even make eye contact, because if they do, someone will notice. That's more painful. But it deepens the bond so much greater. Yeah. So, that's the point. That's why Kurukshetra is said to be the highest. Because there you have Radha and Krishna there, and they can't interact. Because they see each other. They see Braja, Radha, and Krishna. But their external manifestation is not. Radharani can't manifest as Braja, Radha. Too much energy, too much that people will notice. Krishna can't. He has to be very formal. Others will notice. That's why the whole thing of Ratha Yatra, that's why it's so special festival. Is that taking him back to that situation in which they can manifest that rasa. That's why that's so integral in Chaitanya's pastimes. Because that's the bridge. Ratha Yatra is the bridge between the two spheres. Basically, it's there. You have Radharani, you have Mother Jashoda, you have, you know, in those different four kinds of friendship, you have Sudam, Sridam, Subal, you know, these persons, Manumangal, you have, and you have his servants, Dhanishta, Rakhdak, all these different ones. They're the direct servants. But even them, they're all serving Radharani. They're actually only expanded through Radharani. But they're different personalities because tattva, that's why tattva doesn't function there. Because otherwise it gets too weird. Because in Dwarka, then they go in and out of this tattva and rasa. You know, they're the child, and then, you know, he's God, he's our child, he's our God. Like, goes back and forth. So as soon as the tattva comes in, then it changes the whole rasa. So they'd be unimpeded, then the tattva aspect isn't there. So the aspect that all others are expanding from Radharani, then it's not an important aspect. You know, as for knowledge, so we understand where everything sits, then we get into it. But when it actually comes to the point, it's not important. So there's only a handful that are there. Everybody else is serving their servants. And their main servants are also already there, the main expansion. So the whole hierarchy of the internal potency is already there. You know, you have Radharani, then you have her Astasaki, you have her, they each have their maid servants. They have their prompt like this, you know? And so, and then we as jivas can connect into that. Because otherwise, then we're going to come there and we're going to be the life of the party, or what? No. Party's already going on. Then we come there and we just take part. You know, it's already a great party. You know, someone's already worked it out. We just have to come along and do our bit.
Because
you see the one before you. Yeah. Well, that's why it's said that the closest thing you get on the mundane platform to actual love is the true mother's affection for the child. Because there it's the child's pleasure. Everything's just service to them. As soon as the mother does something for herself, then it throws something off. You know, she feeds, she cooks, she dresses, everything's there. If she gets anything to eat or not, it doesn't matter. You know, it's, as long as that's there. So we even see it here. The more it's that service, the more pleasure is there. You know, the satisfaction of seeing others happy. You know, the father of family, he's done his duties, he's made the facilities, everyone's peaceful, satisfied, he was protected. There's a happiness there. That's more than the service he gets from them. So those aspects are always there. That service is always more. Therefore, they say the job well done, because you feel it's there. Others are there. The benefit is there. But now if you take it and there you've done it to some degree, but you're still taking the credit. You know, the mother, there's that sense of mine, but it's mundane. So there is, it's her child, meaning her, meaning she's in control. So she's her child's God, right? Even though her child made God to her, but at the same time is, you know, she's in charge God, while the other one is, you know, gets a, yeah, yeah. One is bundle of joy God, and the other is, you know, gotta change the diapers God, right? So whatever. So so if you remove that, or that sense of mine is on simply to please the other person, it completely changes from here. Therefore, it's pure. That's where it's called here perverted rasa. Even though externally it looks the same as the spiritual world, therefore we call it pious, it's still perverted because the mood is, I'm God. I'm the enjoyer. Even though it's still pious and nice and everything. In the spiritual world, you don't have that. What's done is simply to please Krishna. Right? Mother Yashoda is simply going around and completely ignorant of Krishna's, you know, affairs with the gopis, simply because her affection for Krishna, the parental rasa, is so great. He's so dependent, he's so small, he couldn't function unless she takes care of him. You know, and that's all the policing. She can't see that, you know, he's a blooming youth and all these girls taking care of him when they give him his bath and all that, even though they're married women. You know, they're all his girlfriends. You can't see that. Everything she does is for him. Managing the house, the cooking, everything's for him. So even though, you know, all her motherly attachments won't let him go out, you know, let someone else go and herd the cows, you know, there's plenty of people, why you have to do it, you just stay home. You know, like that, waking up in the morning, you know, feeding with the sweets and doing all that. He's God, his teeth won't rot out, you know, he won't get a bad stomach. You know, he doesn't have mucus pile there to be thrown off by feeding him sweets first thing when he wakes up. Right? So he can do it for him. You know, around here they gotta get up, brush their teeth, then feed him the sweets. You know. These kind of things. So there it's fully for his pleasure. Well, here there's still the pleasure of the mother. Let's do this, let's do that. They take the mood. Okay. Can you dance? You know, you dance, where, you know, they sing and they make him dance or do different things and like that. So it's like they're getting him to do what they want him to do for their pleasure. But it's simply for his pleasure so he can taste parental rasa. That's the only reason they do it. They're not doing it because they want to see Krishna dance. They're doing it that they give an opportunity that Krishna can take pleasure in dancing for the mothers. Because that's one of the things, right? The men become under the control of the women. Right, the son under the mother, the boy under the girl, right, the father under the daughter, like that. It's a taste. So then, in the material world, both sides have their purpose. But in the spiritual world, then it's simply to please Krishna. And Krishna just wants to reciprocate the devotees, because they come to him in that way, they reciprocate. You know, so it's a very different. There's no perversion there. It's pure. It's perfect. Like that. Because it is.
I understand now. They ask Krishna to dance. That's actually the
reason. Because then he tastes, they're the ashray, or the shelter of parental rasa. He is rasa. So for him to experience pleasure of rasa, there has to be interaction. So to interact, then you have to have a devotee that has a particular mood of rasa. That exchanges with you in that rasa. So for them to behave as parents then draws from him the pleasure of acting as the son. So then he tastes rasa. So them behaving as a parent and doing all those activities gives rise to him tasting parental rasa. Because he's actually the one who tastes it. He's the Vishaya. They taste his pleasure. They don't taste the rasa. Said, he is rasa. He tastes rasa. We taste his pleasure. But we taste the pleasure of his rasa, I mean his happiness in that rasa. You know what I'm saying? The devotee is the ashray of that rasa, so you say they're in that rasa. Because they always relate like that. But they don't taste the pleasure of the rasa, because that means they're the enjoyer. They taste the pleasure of Krishna's pleasure interacting with them in that rasa. Krishna tastes the pleasure of that rasa. Right? So that's the indirect, that's Shakti. Shakti doesn't directly, is not directly pleased. The mother eats for herself, there's no taste at all. You see a mother who is expert at cooking, expert at taking care of her children, if she's alone in the house with nothing there, she'll nibble on this and that, which takes nothing to prepare. Probably leftovers, or she'll buy stuff. She will not prepare those things that take hours and days to prepare for herself, never. No, but the point is that's just the way it is. They're trained like this. Because Mother Yashoda does. Yoga Maya. Because Yoga Maya is also Sarup Shakti. That's the thing. Radharani is Sarup Shakti. Yoga Maya is Sarup Shakti. So Yoga Maya creates the situations and the movements of everything to perfectly match the to bring maximum pleasure to Krishna. Simply to please Krishna. No. That's the difference. That's why here is perverted. That's why it's so hard to understand. That's why it said perform your duties here with knowledge. Because we're going to do them out of our attachment. Right? Someone's a husband or a wife or a son or a daughter or in charge or something because of their own attachment to those things. That's why they have the conditioned nature to perform those duties. So that will just keep us here. We don't perform the duties, we'll go to hell. It'll be non-process, we'll go to hell. We perform the duties, we'll be process, we'll go to heaven, planets. So we still stay here. So we perform those duties in knowledge to please Krishna. Then that knowledge breaks the attachment to the duties here, the perverted attachment to the rasas. Yeah, the false ego. And takes us beyond the material world. And the bhakti takes us into the spiritual world. And then we'll grow our new attachment. Attachment to Krishna in relationship. And it will be different. It won't be the same. It's not because we're, you know, there's an idea, the sahajiyas, their idea is unless you're in conjugal rasa here, you won't understand conjugal rasa there. That's bogus. It's the one who's celibate, he actually understands. Because he's not clouded by the perversion. Right? It means the devotee, properly situated devotee, even as a grihastha, understands there's something beyond. Because he sees that the conjugal rasa doesn't actually offer what is, you know, said to offer. It doesn't exist. But because of attachment to it, there's still that endeavor to fulfill those needs. But when one gives that up, therefore, when one becomes fully sense-controlled, it doesn't matter what varna or ashram you're in, you're out of here. That's sannyas. When the senses are controlled and you're indifferent, you know, to whatever's been seen or heard or spoken or will be spoken, or, then you're not here. That's sannyas. So giving that up, then when it comes there, that's why it's not something to really worry about. We just know it's there, but we don't have experience of it. But we know that there's something higher. Therefore, the example is given in the mother, because on the mundane platform, we know the surrender and everything. Manu says, in 100 years, you cannot pay back to the parents the trouble that they went through, you know, for birth and raising you up to, you know, adulthood. Right? So even though that was only a few years, you can't pay it back in 100. Right? So therefore, we understand, appreciate what surrender, what service is rendered. But still, it's not the same as there. There it goes to its perfection.
My Krishna recommends also to give up the knowledge.
Yeah, that's why at one point the knowledge has to be dropped. Knowledge is a tool, it's like a thorn. Jnana is a thorn, but it's the excellent thorn to get out the one that's of attachment that's stuck in. Right? So by using that, we can actually get. That's why we have to be careful, otherwise we'll have two thorns. stuff, you know. But that's the point.
Maharaj, when you got philosophizing, because knowledge is eternal.
Yeah. No, it's there, but it's not the prominent, it's not the drive. The point is that at one point when you get to the stage of bhava, bhakti, that knowledge is not the driving force behind what you're doing. Once you come to Brahma Bhuta, then you're out of the material world. Knowledge is only to get you out of the material world. Right? To know that you're not God, you have to hear that you're a servant. But once you're situated as a servant, and you have affection for God, then there's nothing to be removed. There's no anartha to be removed. That's why it's said that Brahma Bhuta is the actual full platform of anartha nivritti.
No.
It means you have knowledge, means knowing better how to perform services within the rasa. That's there. You know, it's just like all these things of that. That's the common knowledge. It means nectar devotion. All that esoterics in the back of the book, they're just like go over ahead. That's common knowledge in the spiritual world. Because you can tell what ecstasy is and what things people are having. Therefore, otherwise, how do you know how to treat it?
It's cognition.
Yeah. It's chit. It's the chit potency. But it's not in the form of just knowledge. It means that's why chit has to be applied. It's applied knowledge. Chit potency is applied knowledge. Means having the knowledge and applying it, that's actual, proper. Having knowledge, not applying it, that's the jnana. Applying it, but not having knowledge, that's the karma. So that's why it has to be knowledge, applied knowledge. The two of them together, that can be engaged in devotional service. So here it will be the chit potency empowers mundane intelligence and mundane senses. In the spiritual world, it's spiritual intelligence, spiritual senses. So the chit potency there then empowers. And then rasa is attained. Krishna's pleasure is attained.
So now, Chapalaya Prabhupada says that there is knowledge, but that knowledge comes from bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
And then that knowledge, because bhakti is just interested in rasa, so that knowledge is for becoming
rasa. Yeah, very good. You heard? Chandivas makes the point that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur then says the point that there is knowledge in the spiritual world, but it's coming from bhakti. And so it is simply for the pursuance of bhakti. So by exercising it, it simply churns the ocean or rasa, ocean of bhakti. Now, what's the most intelligent way? That's why you see the gopis are always referred to as clever. She's a clever gopi. They don't all mean. Sometimes they'll say she's beautiful. Sometimes they'll say she's young. Sometimes this, but they'll always say they're clever. It's always there. So intelligence is there. Because you have to be intelligent. How are you going to sneak out of the house at night and not get caught? You have to be intelligent. You know, you have to use intelligence to sneak off from the cowherd boys. You know, Madhu means the boys have to use intelligence to keep the bag of ladus away from Madhu Mangal. I mean, you know, all these, they all need intelligence. You know.
The conversations they have.
Oh, yeah.
They're so witty.
Witty, yeah.
And again, they just come back with, you can never even imagine the conversation.
Yeah, the wittiness is so great. So intelligence there is from bhakti. So here we're talking about just this, because the point of sambandha avideya prayojana as three separate entities, that's a vision that is given to the conditioned soul as a tool to get out of the material world. But once you're out, the sambit, sandini, and vladini potencies, they just, how they interact and all that's imperceivable. So one doesn't make the distinction. You know, one doesn't distinguish that Radharani is Hladini and Mother Jashoda is something. You don't make that distinction. And the cow is a Sunday. You don't make that distinction. Because it's all just moves together. You know. So it's just, those aren't made. So it's only rasa is there that there's attraction to Krishna, attachment to Krishna, service to Krishna. That aspect of the Samadhavideya version remains. Because that's the actual devotion. Your devotion of attachment to Krishna, attraction, and service. So then out of there then springs all this knowledge of relationships and knowledge of the movement of love. So therefore you know what are the activities to match that movement. Right? Because when there's affection, there's manifestation. Manifestation means it follows a path. That path is crooked. Right? So therefore, you have to have intelligence to know that path and how to follow it. You know, Radharani is saying, telling Krishna, get out of here. She wants him to stay. Krishna's touching her. She's going, don't touch me. She's in ecstasy that she touched him. Right? So that path is not straight. So it takes intelligence to know how to work that those things out, how to make it happen. Because otherwise it's so delicate, it's so intimate that the smallest thing can set it off and put it into a different mood. That's the point. That's why only God can enjoy women, because they're unenjoyable. Because the delicacy of it, one little thing changes the whole thing. It makes no sense. But for God, since it's only test of rasa, then they know the path, they know how to take it through. You know, so as it flows, there's no, because there's no attachment. There's affection, but there's no attachment to enjoying the senses. You know, so Krishna is there with Radharani, and then Kotila shows up. He's not sitting there frustrated and bummed out the rest of the day and this and that, because he wanted to be sitting with Radharani and touch her, and now Kotila's come, he can't do that. No, just immediately, bang, they just go into another mode. Hey, let's go into, I think it's Chitra's garden. Yeah, anything, you know, Chitra's garden. Everything there is golden. I mean, everything there is, yeah. Either everything there is golden. I think hers is golden. And then I think Indulekha's everything is black. So everything's black, then when Kotila comes in, all she sees is Radharani and the gopis, because they're golden, so they stand out. They don't see Krishna. So she comes in, I thought Krishna was here. No, who said Krishna's here? Or the other way, she goes in and says, oh, Krishna, and where are the gopis? You know, so they just immediately move from one taste to the next. But on the mundane platform, the men can't do that. They're going along, things are nice, they say one word that, you know, 2 minutes ago created a nice atmosphere, now they use it, bang, it's out in something else. They don't know what happened. The phone rings, bang, gone. They don't know what happened. Girl's moving on, tasting some new taste with the same intensity, and the boy's left out in the cold, and he's frustrated and upset, and what went on? They'll make a new plan, okay, I don't say that anymore, okay, now, you know. But the point is, you can't. Because it's not meant, only Krishna, he is Purusha, he can enjoy it. So therefore it works. So for him there's no problem. So that path is known, but it's not a path of material enjoyment.
It's ahead.
Huh?
Krishna's always ahead of him. He knows
where. Even he's ahead of him, he's even behind him. It doesn't matter, because the point is, he knows everything, he's the enjoyer of everything anyway, so he lets them run it. You know? I mean, he's God, Radharani could always like him. Right? But he puts it so Yoga Maya, she doesn't. I mean, she always likes them, but she pretends like, you know, get out of here, I don't want to see you again. You know? Like that. And so here it's done because the Gorilla itself is frustrated. And something she wanted wasn't there, so she's actually upset. Spiritual world, they just do it to please Krishna. They're not upset with Krishna. That's the difference. Here, they're not actually women, they're men. That's why you can't enjoy it. You know? Because they look like women, but their mentality is men. The psychology will work as women, but their mentality is men. So they're Purusha. They're Purusha Shakti. So it's an expansion of Durga. She's Purusha Shakti. Right? So therefore, then it works like that. But the principle that it goes the way the women like it, that's because that's Krishna. He is the controller. He lets it go the way the women arrange it. Yoga Maya, the gopis, Mother Yashoda. It goes that way. So it gives pleasure because he is the controller. Here it drives you nuts. Therefore it said the dancing dog. right? Because to be in an environment where the women will reciprocate with you, you have to be submissive. You have to be. It is demeaning to the masculine principle. Like that. Yeah, in Kali Yuga it's even worse. At least before there was some big difference. Yeah. So the thing is here, it's just demeaning. Because you give the heart, but they can't deal with it. They don't know what to do with it. You know, like that heart, you have to have one to know how to deal with one. So that's the point, is they don't know. So that depth they can't deal with. So they have the heart, it's there, so it's put on the shelf, okay, along next to, you know, the this, the that, and all the other acquisitions that they have. You know, even if they're pious and they stick to one heart, you know, but the point is it's just a paraphernalia. So what's yours, you deal with how you like. It's not a consideration that that heart has its own consciousness. Your watch doesn't have consciousness. It's a refrigerator. Your car doesn't. You know, but it's yours. You deal with it as you like, when you want. So therefore, this heart is yours. When you like, when you want, you deal with it. But that's not the heart. That heart also has its needs. So that's the point. Is they can never deal. And man can never understand how to deal. Therefore, it can't work here in the material world. Like that, because we're so used to it, the habit is there, therefore grihasthashram is there in that. But, you know, so you slowly become fully aware of it, wind down, and then drop it. Drop it as a principle. It's not drop this woman or that woman, it's drop the concept that I am male and that they are female. No, I'm female, you know, with a masculine mentality. They're female with a masculine mentality. You know? So you know that has to be dropped. So it can't be. It just doesn't work. But you follow religious principles and follow the duties. Then what mundane thing you're looking for, you'll get as close as possible. And having got as close as possible, then you can go. Okay, it doesn't work. Because if we don't get close, then out of frustration we say, this is useless. But if a nice comes along, you know, like you say, all girls, they're all ugly. But if you see a girl that you don't think is ugly, that's it. Oh, they're all nasty. If you find a nice girl, then that's it. You know, oh, they're so demanding or so materialistic. If you find one that's not, then you're finished. So it's not a matter of just, it's this one. It's a matter of concept that I'm the enjoyer. So therefore, if you get, then you can see, I have it, but nothing's there. I have the woman, she's submissive, she's nice, she does everything, she serves perfectly, she's so wonderful, sweet, chaste, everything like this, but still there's no substance. There's no real meaning to the conversations or the like that, other than the performance of duties and devotional service. That is there. But other than that, this concept of man and woman is going to relate together and be happy, that doesn't exist. Yeah, it means it's supposedly there, but where is it? So in the beginning, it's, you know, enthusiastic. Young couples are very fired up and all that. Then, you know, as they get a little mature with time, because they've done, then they see, hey, this doesn't give anything. So simply the commitment between the two persons to serve Krishna together, that remains. The camaraderie, that's real. Yeah. But the concept, the conjugal relationship, is you're going to get some taste out of it, that doesn't exist. That it can't exist. Because this is a reflection of the real. And the real is it's being done to please Krishna, not to please yourself. Krishna is trying to please the gopis. Gopis are trying to please him. Here, one's trying to please himself. One may say, no, we're trying to please. Yes, the man buys a girl gifts, this, that, because then she'll be nice and submissive and that, and she'll reciprocate, and then he'll get what he wants. And the girl may be, you know, all lovey-dovey, this, that, because then she'll get him to do what she wants. So they do the duties together, they get what each other wants, and crocodile smiles put on the side, then it works. Because you take what is the conscious effort. You don't take the unconscious, what's underlying. The mercenary aspect is dropped. right? For social functioning and that, the mercenary aspect is dropped. If you want to break your attachment to the material world, then you look at that very seriously. Because that definitely breaks up the, breaks the illusion, though the habit remains. That's why grihastha life is, you know, given for a certain amount of time. Is you practice grihastha life until the habit is removed. When the habit's removed, then it can be dropped. Like that. You know, so the average time of dropping is, you know, like that, 20, 25 years. You know, if one places it more on, you know, more on knowledge and full-time service, you can reduce it down. One can come to Vanaprastha quicker. But that means both parties are on the same page. So a point was before, as Pankajanga's point, is that the spiritual world, it's the opposite. The gopis are doing all these things just to create, because he is the enjoyer. So therefore, things moving in a crooked way brings him pleasure, because he is in control. So to make the point he's not in control is pleasurable. And that probably gives the example of that, you know, there was some big guy in England. Somebody is big, some lord or something, it's Mountbatten. Somebody wanted to see him. And they were told to wait, and hours went by. And the guy saw the door was open, he's wondering because he's seeing nobody, he can't figure out what it is. So in patience, he goes into the room. And there's the person down on the floor with his grandchild on his back saying, okay, go here, go there, you know, just like that. And the pleasure was so great, that was much greater than him managing, if there was more than that, that means managing India. You know, he was the viceroy for India, means he managed India. He was basically the king of India. But his grandson, that was so much more fun. So Krishna is the lord of the cause of creation, but more fun than that is Mother Yashoda telling him what to do, the gopis telling him what to do, you know, the cowherd boys, that's so much more pleasurable. Therefore, they're doing all these things is simply to increase that. So right wing is when there's rules, then that means it goes smoothly. Because rules, the taste of rules being followed is the taste. So therefore, it should go smoothly. There should be as minimal amount of up and down as possible. Therefore, Rukmini is the prominent queen in Dwarka. Because her, it runs smoothly. There are no, she doesn't get on his case. She doesn't harass him. She's the perfect wife. Well, what's his name? Satyabhama is considered, she's not the primary wife, she's one of the eight. Right? Because a king can have one main wife and there could be seven others. But they're secondary to that one. Because she's left wing, so she's always making obstacles for him. But because he's God, still, there's a taste. So in the same in Vrindavan, you have the right wing and left wing gopi. So the right wing is prominent, but not as prominent as left wing. Because they create more obstacles. So there's more of that taste.
Well, is Satyabhama my favorite wife?
Yeah, he's the most favorite. But because it's rules and regulations, Rukmini is special because she's the only one that gets embraced by him other than Balaram. So because of that, then that's special. But at the same time, as far as taste, here. So, you know, that's the whole thing. Yeah, that's the fun. So that's why you see, many times you see these really tough men, they like really wild women. You know, they like to do it with a little spunk and all that. But if you just want to get down to devotional service, then right wing is, that's the system. Because we don't need distractions in the material energy. It just increases the desire for material energy. Yeah. So that's the whole point. So that's why in the material world, then we follow that path. It's the lowest there, it's the highest here. Yes. When male and female get liberated. Yeah, it goes away. Can they understand each other? as a liberated person, can they still understand, if the husband or wife both become liberated, can they still understand who's the husband, who's the wife?
No.
Yeah, because
can then understand each other at that point.
Yeah. The point is liberation is what's beyond. But the point is the functioning of the body is, even you have a liberated woman, her body is still going to move in feminine movements. It's not going to suddenly now become masculine or something else. You know, I mean, the construction of the body is such. Their hips are different than males. They will walk differently. Their voice is different. Their movements are different. When the energy moves differently. Yeah, I mean, you find women is not going out in, it's extreme. Men is different. You know? So that will remain, because that's just the modes of nature. Liberation means you stop identifying with the modes of nature, that this is me, that the body is going to do exactly the same thing. So this idea is, well, not the body can move, therefore it doesn't have to do that. That's not intelligence. Intelligence is, we know this body and mind is still going to do the same things. It's just a matter of whether we're identified with it or attached to it. Like that. That's the difference. So therefore, then, so many things just go down. The needs of the body go down. The needs of the mind go down. All that goes. So it's just the basic fundamental. You still have to eat. You still have to sleep. You know that others still relate to the body in that way. So therefore, you deal in that way. You know, like that. You know, it's like, you may not think you're this body, that you're a woman, but others will think you are. So, like that. So unless you, so that's the point. So unless you act as an Uttamadhikari, then you can't drop the culture. Uttamadhikari is beyond that. No one's going to relate to it. Either it's an Abhidhut, so no one's going to relate, or the purity. And even then, you can only do so in high-grade society. Because a low-grade man still doesn't matter. You know, they got mad women. In their society, so here's another group acting as a mad woman, so it doesn't matter. Does that make some sense? In other words, the attachments will go away, so therefore the mind moving and all that will become stable. But still, the field that it moves in and stuff like that is the same. So that's the way it's that's the element you're working through. Does that make some sense? If they can or can't? Yeah, they can perfectly deal. It means that socially they'll deal properly. Why not? It means the duties stay the same. The liberated husband still makes the money. The liberated wife still, spends the money. It still works in the same way. Because if they're functioning on that platform, then they'll still do that. So that means they're acting as moneyless, so they discriminate. It's just like Vyasadeva, he's an Uttamadhikari. But he's acting as a mudra. He's distinguishing between male and female because he has to establish dharma. Women do this, men do this, this and that. But his son is an Abhidhut, he doesn't have to distinguish. So therefore, what does it matter? Is tree Brahman or naked girl Brahman, what does it matter? I have nothing to gain from it. It's all Brahman. So there's nothing to gain. So the same way as the liberated, husband and wife, they have nothing to gain from the Grihastha ashram. So simply they just perform duties together. They perform devotional activities. Yeah. Because in Vaikuntha you still have husbands and wives and they're liberated. It's still, that function is still there. In Vrindavan they still have them. So that means it's still there. It's not. It's just a matter of who does what duties. That's all. It's just a matter of duties. Mother showed as a mother. There's mother duties. Coward boys is coward boys, and they do coward boy duties. And she has the mentality of a mother. They have the mentality of that boys. Okay. So all those things remain. The duties remain. The mentalities. So it's just a matter of, from mundane mentality to spiritual. So they can tell the difference if they want. they don't want, then they don't have to. Then, but they wouldn't stay in the city. They go to the forest. Scar of death.
Yeah, it's powerful enough to remain removed, like a 20% of an artist that are needed to attain the highest place, which is the pen of Krishna. Or the samskara itself has a potency, or so the body becomes
the death samskara is for removing impediments that keep one. It basically means it removes impediments coming from impiety. And so whatever good qualities are there go through. So if you've thought of Krishna, you go back to Godhead, then the death ceremony doesn't have any particular function for you. It does for those as your associates. Right? Like that. But if you don't go back to Godhead, then it clears the impious aspects and all that, so that your good qualities and all that come through. The devotional aspects will remain, and your pious aspects will remain. But the impious, it won't get in the way of your pious. Like that. So that's the importance of it. Because the half of your conditioned nature, half of your conditioned nature is from last life. Right? So that means, of last life, then half of that is what you were in the last life, and the other half is death rites. Because even though, let's say, you were a big, big Brahmin, but the death rites weren't performed, then that piety to continue as a Brahmin doesn't come through into this life, so you may be born in another family. Therefore, the death rites are important from that aspect. For the conditioned nature. The spiritual, no. That's why for us, even the death rites are simplified. You know, the basic things of burning the body, putting the ashes, and those kind of things. But other than that, after that, it's all simplified. We just, you know, have the prasad, feed the devotees, have the kirtan, you know, some remember finish. Like that. That's there. But otherwise, for on the mundane platform, then basically, daily there's a tarpana to be done, monthly there's a ritual to be done, and on the anniversary of the year you have to do a full feeding or full ritual, and that goes on for your whole life. So, we've been saved from big, big trouble. There's a big amount of ritual. Big amount of ritual. Yeah, once a year, but they don't do it monthly and daily, all that. So I'm just saying the Vedic is all. Yeah, once a year or something. Yes. Why everyone's not females in the spiritual world, for prakriti, is that prakriti means what energy, what is enjoyed. Like that. That's the point. So in the spiritual world, then both male and female are enjoyed by Krishna. But now the nature of enjoyment for Krishna is different between men and women. Like that. So therefore, there'll be a difference between male servants and female servants, or male friends and female friends, or fathers and mothers. Right? Like that. So therefore, it creates the variety. See, the male form is the natural form of enjoyer, and the female form is the natural form of enjoyer. But the point is Krishna is the enjoyer, and all else are his servants. So therefore, you have the form for rasa, but they're still enjoyed. So But within that, then the boys will have their duties and girls will have theirs. So therefore, the cowherd boys, because they're in a male form, they can sit with Krishna at the table and eat with him. The gopis, then they serve or hide in the kitchen. Right? So it gives rise to rasa. So each one has their place where intimacy is tasted. You know. So the cowherd boys, their intimacy can be shown anywhere, except for the confidential. Then that has to be restricted. But otherwise, they can sit next to Krishna, put their arm on Krishna's shoulder, anywhere. It doesn't matter. You know, unless it's a very formal situation, then they have to be a little more reserved. So it's simply they're still enjoyed. But within enjoyment, there's still that masculine-feminine principle. The point is if you have masculine-feminine principle as the basis of everything, therefore it has to pervade everything. Right? So even in the manifestation of Shakti, its external form also has to be broken into male and female. So you can take that principle and just keep breaking. So it still remains. Does that make some sense?
I ask you, for example, a woman is supposed to have a feminine side of nature, like the moon, Venus. Sometimes they have the sun, Saturn, Mars in the first house. They're completely influenced by masculine planet, and their masculine nature comes out.
It means if the woman has planets and that are more masculine, it's still that is their abhideya, their method is more masculine, but their attraction and attachments will still be feminine. You can't get around that. It won't change. They may be more aggressive, go out and get themselves, but they're still what they're going to get, and all that's still feminine. Even if it's no, they've got, you know, chrome parley and the leather jacket. But you still, their leather jacket and the cut and everything is a little different. So that's something. You can still tell the difference between a lady on a Harley and a man on a Harley. You still tell the difference. Just like a male and female dog. Like that. Just their moods are different. The man more has that, you know, mood, and the woman is more like that. You just see, it's just there. It's all pervasive. But she's a dog, you know. She gets out there and she can fight and bite and scratch and bark as good as, you know, the next one. In fact, sometimes these older, bigger female dogs are more tough than the younger male dogs, you know. But still, she's female. Yeah. Tigress. Now, like you said, I don't know if you saw it in that one. I think in the Atarsha Plan. You have these two male lions sitting down next to the water hole, just sitting there. It's a hot day, completely spaced out, lazy, couldn't care less what's going on. And this, you know, really, you know, what do you call it, uptown, you know, female lioness comes, you know, sauntering by. And she saunters by slow enough and close enough that it should attract the attention of these two male lions. Nothing. They're just... So she walks by long enough to have done her thing, right? And then they don't respond. So after walking by, you know, all looking different directions and not paying attention and being the hard to get, doing all the trip, they didn't respond. Then she just turns around, walks over them, walks up to the one of them, you know, the bigger of the two, the more, you know, desirable, and whacks them right in the face, and then walks off. She was insulted. So point is she may be a tough lioness, she can take you down, kill you, and eat you, but that doesn't matter, she's still a woman. Her needs and desires are still the same. So that we can't change because God's made it that way. You know, that's the whole point. It's just made like that. Therefore you have male and female rhinos, you know, they're still tough. You still don't want to get in the way of a rhino, they'll still walk over you. You know. But the point is, you know, you're a female.
Just beautiful person, male and female form, they have the same heart to satisfy Krishna.
Yeah. means the male and female, there's no Purusha Shakti, so there's no enjoyment. But still, how they will react to the situation will be female, and how the males will react will be male. That's what gives the taste. Therefore, then Krishna goes out with the cowherd boys and does those things, or his confidential boyfriends, or, you know, hanging out with the cowherd men, like that, you know. And then on the other side, then with the cowherd women, you know, with the gopis, you know, like this. Or the cowherd, the girlfriend, means the friends, means they're not girlfriends. They're girls who are friends. They don't have a conjugal relationship. They have a sakya. In other words, Balaram's conjugal girlfriends are Krishna's friends in sakyaras. Like that. You know, it's just like you say, or you take Kundalata, his cousin's sister. So she's always on Krishna's side. So she's always trying to get Krishna in with the gopis. You know, they don't want to see him. So she dreams up great ways to get him in. Because she's a girl and she's trusted and she's one of the respectable persons in the community. So she can take Krishna in. But she's Krishna's friend. Their relationship between Krishna and her is sakya. Ras. It's not conjugal.
They're cousins.
I'm not sure if they're first cousins or second cousins, but whatever, they're cousins. So all those pastimes where Krishna comes in dressed as a girl or something like that, she's the one that gets her in. You know? So like that. So you have friends like that also. So it's got one mood. And then the boy is in that, it's a different mood. Because even though she's a friend, he'll deal with her gently, talk, you know, the words he'll use, the mood of tone of voice, the things that they'll talk about. It means they're not going to talk about, you know, the latest plow or something. You know, they're going to talk about, you know, going and seeing the gopis and the conjugal rasa and household things and, you know, stuff that go along that line that are in the feminine field. Or the cowherd boys is going to talk that. He's not going to talk all these other girly stuff. So that way, he tastes both rasas. He tastes both aspects of the same friendship rasa. You know, and his mood with his father is going to be different than his mood with his mother. You know, and yeah, the mood between right wing and left wing gopis will also be different. Krishna's the life, whatever is his mood, whatever he wants to do. So that makes it special. Because there's no demand like that. Whatever he wants, then that makes it special. So it makes him happy. Therefore, if he's happy being off with other gopis, then what to do? Same time to increase his happiness, then Radharani will make a stink after. But it's not because she feels slighted. Right? She's not angry for that. It's just part of the past, part of the rasa. Something more, or feel the door has closed. Yes? Shikshastra. At what time?
What did?
Oh, I see. Yes, you'd be doing that kind of unknown. Like that. Yeah, when the sun goes down, somehow the switch goes off.
Then,
okay. Yeah, probably five would be better. Four is how I'm serving. Right here. Do you have that Shikshastika of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary? Or we can use a Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because there it goes to the Shikshastika. You have that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, 5 o'clock. Relax. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarvadeha Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainata Gaurabhema ki.